think I must be one of the few people who currently doesn't believe Barack Obama is the second coming.
It's that accent. My favorite Brit, David Icke.
Hello, George. How you doing, mate?
David, how are you?
I'm good, yeah.
Where are you? Are you back in the UK or are you in the States?
I've been moving around like crazy in the last little while, and it shows no sign of stopping, but I'm in London at the moment.
Just
down from London, anyway.
I didn't have a chance to meet you at the conference up there in San Jose where you packed the house, and it was absolutely riveting. And a couple people went in there to try to get me to get in to say hi to you at the end, but then my conference was you were so big that I had to wait a half hour for people to come out of your place in order to some of them to trickle into mine.
Well, it is quite extraordinary to me what's happened, given the fact that when I started out nearly 20 years ago, I couldn't fill a phone box, that people are now more and more beginning to see that the world is not like they thought it was, and they're looking at another explanation for it. And unfortunately, at the moment, we are in a very dangerous period with regard to...
Where did David go? Well, Tommy, you're going to have to call David back because he's behind the secret door and they got him somewhere. So, you know, we'll get David Icke back and we'll get him right on. Now, this is incredible because every controversial guest we have had on, something has clipped their phone lines all the time, including Jordan Maxwell, right? Who is now really concerned about things that are going on. And David, of course, is one of the most controversial ever. And I think they got him clipped, too, because that, you know, that was just, you know, boom, there he goes. So let's go back to David Icke now. And there you are, David. The Illuminati's getting you, David.
Yeah, was it something I said, George?
Yeah, I mean, just poof, you were gone. You know what's funny, though? Every time I have a controversial guest on, something happens to the line, then we get them back and they're okay. But it's almost as if they're telling us we can do anything we want. Clip. There you go.
Well, they can do anything they want as long as 6 billion people allow it to happen. They can't do what they want when 6 billion people or even a fraction of that wake up and realize where the real power is. And it's not with these goons in dark suits and dark glasses and uniforms and all the rest of it. It's with the people. But what's happening at the moment, George, with this whole Obama myth is that genuine people are being misdirected into believing that this is a change in direction when it is nothing more than the next stage in an ongoing agenda. Because, you know, when you're starting to get really deeply into where you want to go, which is an Orwellian state, which is the destruction of national sovereignty, the creation of a centralized, globalized dictatorship, you can't have a Bush with no communication skills and someone who is blatantly a warmonger, blatantly has very little intelligence, and blatantly has an agenda. He's not going to sell it, George. You need a salesman, and Obama is the salesman. And the people behind him are particularly Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the national security advisor to Jimmy Carter, and with David Rockefeller, was the co-founder of the Trilateral Commission, one of these major Illuminati fronts. And he has an agenda which would make people's hair stand on end. And he's been articulating it in books for 40 years.
Yes.
Now, he's the man behind Obama. Also, George Soros, an associate of Brzezinski, who he's...
The billionaire.
Yeah, and he uses his network of foundations to manipulate behind the scenes. In fact, Bloomberg.com ran a story recently that one of the major organizations behind Obama's Democratic Party in terms of developing policy is something called the Center for American Progress. And as Bloomberg pointed out, who funds that? George Soros. George Soros, former board member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And you've only got to look at the team that Obama's now announcing to see what this change and something to believe in, this hope, was really all about. It's been a massive mind manipulation operation on the American psyche. And that's why Obama has never, throughout the campaign, articulated with any specifics what his change, hope, and something to believe in actually means. Why is that? Because once you start to get into specifics, you narrow the number of people who are interested in what you have to say because they see what you mean by your vacuous, meaningless words. So what they've done, and they've done it brilliantly, is turned Obama into a blank screen, which people can project onto him what they see as the change, hope, and something to believe in, and what it means to them, what those words mean to them. So they've turned Obama through the campaign into all things to all people. And what's going to happen now, and it's already happening, is you're going to see what those words really mean. And the change is not change for the better, change for the people, change to more freedom. It's going to be the continuing change of our society towards a global dictatorship and an Orwellian society.
I was with some folks who own a couple of gun shops in St. Louis a few days ago. They're concerned that there's going to be a massive effort to take away Americans' rights to bear arms.
Well, the thing is about Obama, he is going to sell a cyanide pill with sugar all over it. You know, you can use things like coming together. We must come together. Yes, we must come together.
Absolutely.
We must have unity. Well, that would be nice, but unity in and of itself is not the point. It's what the unity is designed to achieve. Nazi Germany was unified for a long time into the Second World War, but was that a good thing? My goodness me, no. What is this unity about? And you can use terms like that, coming together, we must have unity, to actually impose centralization of power under the name of unity. You can say we must have a unified North America, so let's have a North American Union. We must have a unified monetary system to solve the problems of the financial crisis, i.e. A world central bank and a global financial dictatorship, which I've been predicting in my books for 15, 20 years. And all these things can be sold under the guise of something that people actually would like, which is coming together, which is a change for the better, and that's what he's going to do. And also coming together, he's been talking in his speeches about compulsory community service for school children and college students.
Right.
He's talking about having a national civilian security force, which is as well funded as the military, and all these things can be sold under the guise of community, when actually it's just adding more and more bricks and cement to the wall of imposition and centralization of power. And the idea, and this is another myth, you see, the greatest form of mind control, George, is for people to want to believe something is true.
Desperately so.
Yeah, exactly. And they have played that card, because Barack Obama is surrounded by experts in mind manipulation and opinion manipulation. I mean, a simple question. I mean, are we so naive? It seems that many people are, as to believe that someone of a truly independent mind, a truly independent stance, is going to come out of nowhere and is going to run the best funded and slickest election campaign in American presidential history. Of course not. A, he didn't come out of nowhere, because that doesn't happen. He's been brought through, trained, and prepared for this for a long time by people like Brzezinski. And the funding was there because he's a front man for those who are providing the funding. And are these people that run Wall Street and all the rest of it, their representatives are being added to his administration by the day? And are these people that run Wall Street and all the rest of it, who are their representatives are being added to his administration by the day, are they appropriately on Thanksgiving? Are they really turkeys voting for Thanksgiving? Are they really? No, they're not. They are funding a man who is there to sell the next stage of their policy. Which is more and more centralization, more and more imposition of control.
And we're going to see that data,
et cetera.
What will some of the signs be, the obvious signs? So that we can see if this unfolds.
Well, we're all already getting many signs by the people he's putting in his administration. They are anything but people of change. First of all, I'm just going to give you a quote from Brzezinski in a book he wrote in 1970. What's that, 40 years ago? Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. This is what he wrote 40 years ago. The technotronic era involves the gradual appearance of a more controlled society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite, unrestrained by traditional values. Soon it will be possible to assert almost continuous surveillance over every citizen and maintain up-to-date complete files containing even the most personal information about the citizen. These files will be subject to instantaneous retrieval by the authorities. Now, he is describing the world that we now live in, because he knew it was coming, because he's fundamentally connected to the network that's been bringing it in. This is the man behind Obama. And you look at his Treasury team that he's been announcing this week. The Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, president of the New York Federal Reserve Bank, which is the prime bank controlling the Federal Reserve, which is a private cartel masquerading as the Central Bank of America. He's a former employee of the Council on Foreign Relations and of the notorious Kissinger Associates, which has been in my books for a decade. And he's also an attendee of the Bilderberg Group conferences, etc. Obama has made a guy called Larry Summers, National Economic Council Chief. Larry Summers is a fanatical supporter of globalization, which is where this agenda with Obama is designed to go. And when Summers, in 1991, he was Chief Economist of the World Bank, he was exposed publicly for sending a memo advising that the World Bank should dump toxic waste in poor countries because the costs of the ensuing ill health and death would be less in those countries in rich countries. Now, this, George, is a man who has just been appointed by this man of the people. I stand for change, hope, and something to believe in, Obama. So watch the people that he's appointing, and you'll see where the direction is going. Also, another important point to make is, you know, I mean, Hitler and the Nazis knew this. If you just keep repeating something, people get to believe it just by repetition. That we had the idea, this myth that Obama is against war. No, he's not. He's spoken against the invasion and occupation of Iraq. We'll see what he does in office about that. But he's not against war. He's now calling for what, 200,000 troops to head for Afghanistan? Some ridiculous figure, anyway. And he's calling for European troops to go there to Afghanistan. He said that would have no problem bombing Pakistan in the war on terrorism. That he would use force if necessary against Iran. And you know, Brzezinski, I've been following this guy for a long time. Brzezinski makes the neocons behind Bush look like sissies. And Brzezinski was the man when he was national security advisor to Carter, who, and he has admitted this publicly in a Paris magazine a few years ago, he started to fund in Afghanistan opposition to the Kabul regime at the time that was controlled by the Soviet Union. And as he said to this magazine, he did that because he wanted to entice the Soviet Union to invade Afghanistan and give them, quote from Brzezinski, their Vietnam, to weaken the superpower, which they did.
Which they did. Brilliantly, they did.
And you know, George, it cost 1 million Afghan lives. And when that was put to Brzezinski, he had no problem with that because he had achieved his end. What's the problem? We'd weaken the superpower. Of course, the people he funded and trained to challenge the Kabul regime to entice that Soviet invasion then became known as the Mujahideen. They brought a front man out of Saudi Arabia called Osama bin Laden to front them up. They then became the Taliban and what is claimed to be Al Qaeda. Now, this is the man, George, I keep repeating this, who is behind Barack Obama. One of Brzezinski's sons was an advisor to Obama during the election campaign, and his other son was advisor to John McCain, which kind of is more than symbolic of the one-party state that America has masquerading as a two-party state. And Obama, you see, when I was a journalist years ago, I came across this technique which tabloid journalists used to use. If they had someone, say a distressed family who didn't want to talk to the media, what they would do is they would send the first guy in. He would say that he was from a different newspaper to what he was actually from. He would be aggressive, he would be deeply unpleasant, and he would cause even more distress to this family.
Yeah.
He would then leave. They'd then bring the second guy in.
The good guy.
The good guy who told them that he was from the paper he was from. And the whole scam was, look, I am disgusted with my profession sometimes, and I tell you what, you talk to me exclusively, and I'll make sure that that guy and no one like him ever comes and knocks on your door again. Now, you take that, and invariably, the people talk to him because of that. Now, you take that to what's happening now. You've had Bush, who has been in there, a blatant warmonger, a blatant man following an agenda, and he's created the problem, not just in terms of the military situation with Afghanistan and Iraq, but also he has created or been the front man to create, I mean, he can't tie his shoelaces, but to create financial mayhem. Now along comes Mr. Good Guy, and under the technique I talk about, problem, reaction, solution, you've had the problem, you've had the reaction, now here's the solution. It's a man called Barack Obama, and he's going to now say, this is what we need to do to solve the problems, but the person that fronted up the problems, Bush, is controlled by the same people, the same network. Because in the end, the neocons behind Bush lock into the Brzezinski network. The same network that created the problem is now, through Obama, going to offer the solution. And it's going to be more centralization. It's going to be more imposition, masquerading as freedom and change. And, people need to keep their eyes on the ball here, George, because this is a real dangerous time because too many people have bought the myth.
Will people perceive it as welcome change?
What will happen? The thing is that, interestingly, if you go back to Nazi Germany, there are many parallels. There may not seem to be, but there are, because in the 1930s, you had military and particularly economic mayhem in Germany. And along came a man who was considered a great orator, though, my goodness me, not when I watch him, called Adolf Hitler, who was offering what? He was offering pride, new pride in Germany, hope. Something to believe in. He was offering change, and he was offering hope, absolutely. Now, a lot of people seem to forget that Hitler was actually voted into power by the people originally, And then a few years down the line, when he'd had a massive support, yeah, Germany, pride in Germany again, yeah, they realized that they'd signed up for a dream and got a nightmare. You know, you've got the same parallels here in terms of something being sold as something it isn't, and you've got a very good salesman to do it. And
well, we're going to have to just sit back on this one, David, and see how some of these things unfold with some of the signs, as you point out, clearly there. Wow.
All right, everyone, welcome back. And as promised, our guest this week is David Icke, a man that really doesn't need any introduction. But before we bring him on, I do invite everyone to visit his website, which is davidicke.com. And, of course, you can get to that link right from the front page of my website, which is journeyswithrebecca.com. So let's go ahead and welcome David to the show. Hi, David.
Hello, Rebecca.
Oh, this is fabulous. We are so happy. I am so happy. We, as if I got a frog in my pocket, David, to have you here on the show today. And, you know, I did let the audience know that we are doing this pre-recorded based on the fact that when my show actually airs live, it's pretty much in the middle of the night for you. So what we've got is a lot of conversation that we're going to have today. We've got a lot of different topics we're going to cover. But before we're all done here today, we're also going to answer some of the audience's emails, because they did send in some emails on some questions. And really, as I have looked through these questions, David, they are really very, very poignant, well-timed, and most of them are pretty well thought out questions. So I think you're going to enjoy answering them later on in the show. So,
all right, no problem.
Yeah. So that being said, what we're going to do is if anybody out there has already popped onto your website, they're going to see the first thing that pops up there, so which is Barack Obama, the Naked Emperor. So I'd like your take on what all that is, and we're going to kind of flow from that topic into others as well.
Well, I've been traveling and researching for 20 years now, and I've been to 47 countries so far doing it. And over that period, I've put together the structure of how the few control the many on planet Earth. And it's done by a structure of pyramids within pyramids, where, for instance, you go to a bank and the person you hand the check over to in the bank doesn't know what's happening in the bank manager's office behind. He doesn't know what's happening at the next level of the bank and the next level of the bank. But eventually you get to the peak of the pyramid of the bank, and you've got a tiny few people who know how the whole thing fits together. Everyone else within the bank is just going to work, making their contribution, having no idea how their contribution connects with the contributions of others they know or don't know, to create anything but an innocent picture. Each individual contribution appears to be innocent in itself. Now, that bank pyramid goes into a bigger pyramid and a bigger pyramid until eventually you have a pyramid that encompasses the whole of the a global banking system. And at that level, at the peak of that pyramid, are a few interbreeding families that control the whole of the banking system. Now, there's a similar structure with the transnational corporations, which, if you go high enough to that all-encompassing pyramid, is a transnational corporation under different names. And it's the same right across the institutions of society, including politics. We have to have the impression that we live in at least a two-party state. Otherwise, we'd think or realize the penny would drop, that we're living in a one-party state. And so the one party is given two names. In Britain, it's the Conservative Party and the Labour Party, which is currently in government. In America, of course, it's the Democrats and the Republicans. So if you could take this pyramid structure again in people's minds, on one side of the base of the pyramid you've got the Republican Party. On the other side of the base of the pyramid, you've got the Democratic Party. At that level, you've got the party workers and the activists and all the rest of it. As you go up and up and up and up, each side of the pyramid, eventually those two pyramids, or two sides of the pyramid, Democrats and Republicans, fuse into the same force, the same organization. So what you've got with presidents in the United States is the Republican mask on this upper pyramid face replaced by a Democratic mask on this upper pyramid face. So the immediate controllers of George Bush, the Republican president of the last 8 years, were what were known as the neocon networks. And these were like out of think tanks like the Project for the New American Century and the American Enterprise Institute. What you've got now is a movement from the left-hand side, if you like, or the right-hand side, more accurately, of the pyramid, Republicans, to the other side, the Democrats. And the Democrat president, Barack Obama, to be, he's very soon, is controlled by particularly a guy called Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the National Security Advisor to Jimmy Carter and was the co-founder with David Rockefeller of an organization called the Trilateral Commission, set up in 1973, which is a major manipulator of world events and political events, not just in America, but in other parts of the world as well. And next to Brzezinski, you've got his associate, the financier George Soros, and a stream of other connected people. But they connect at the next level of the pyramid into the same organizations that the neocons controlling Bush connected into. So all we've done, Rebecca, is move from one mask on the same face to another mask on the same face. However, what's happened is that I've talked for years about a technique I call problem-reaction-solution. You create the problem and then you offer the solution. And George Bush has been used over the last 8 years to create endless problems, military problems, financial problems, desperate financial problems. And now what we're seeing is Barack Obama being moved in as the apparent, emphasis on the apparent, solution to these problems. And he's got in by saying three words, basically, especially one, change, another one, believe, another one, hope. At no point have these words had any specifics attached to them in terms of what that means. And this is a massive mind control operation, because what they've done is created a situation where Barack Obama, over the last 2 years, particularly over the last one, has become a screen on which people project their versions of what is hope, and what is change, and what is something to believe in. And so he, by not specifying what those mean to him, has allowed himself to be this this screen on which all these people around America have projected their version of it. Now we're going to specifics, because the deal's done, he's got in, and what's happened? All these players that have been manipulating the Republican side of the pyramid for years, who were in the Clinton administration, the Bill Clinton administrations, so the two periods as president, and the networks around George Soros and Zbigniew Brzezinski, they're all being brought in to be the change administration of Barack Obama, when it's just more of the same. And it's been a complete con job, because if you look at Obama's background in one of the most corrupt political systems in the world, in Chicago, it stinks to high heaven, and this is absolutely not a man to be trusted. And I'll just say one more thing. You know, do we really think, it seems a lot of people do, that within this system, that we are going to have a truly independent person who is going to appear out of nowhere? He's going to attract record amounts of funding for a presidential campaign from the very sources in Wall Street, etc., that his change is perceived to be going to challenge and run the slickest campaign in American history, and all that is just going to come out of nowhere. My goodness me. I mean, it's naivety anonymous. He was selected a long time ago, back in the 80s, when he and Brzezinski were at the Columbia University together. Brzezinski as a major lecturer and professor, etc., and Obama as a student. And the Trilateral Commission and its associated foundation network, like the Ford Foundation, have nursed the boy through to what he's become. He never came out of nowhere. He's been planned for a very long time. And it's a staggering fact that he's about to be inaugurated a few weeks from now, and he's still yet not provided the proof that he was born in the United States, when his half sister, his half brother, and his grandmother in Kenya say he was born there.
Yeah, there was a lot of controversy around that, and of course they've kind of squashed that. I've been watching that a little bit, David, how they've been doing that.
Yeah.
And you know, you're absolutely right when you talk about the pyramid. I mean, when you have, we talk about the United States, the Senate and the Congress. Well, you know, both sides of the coin, you know, Republicans and Democrat, both are still in those, you know, political, you know, separation as much as one's a Republican and one's a Democrat. But really, what does that mean? I mean, it used to mean something, or it was supposed to mean something, but in the old days, but really, it is really this, it's just the opposite side of the same coin. That's all it is.
That's all it is. And Barack Obama is, and this will sound staggering to many people in the United States who have bought the Obama myth. He's far more dangerous than Bush, because he can sell a line. George Bush could only take this so far because he had no communication skills. And it was, you know, shall we say, a blatantly not the most intelligent man ever to walk the world.
Oh, my goodness, that's an understatement.
I know. So he could only take this so far. And, you know, people talk about fascism. And, you know, the writer Webster Tarpley makes a very good point when he points out that, you know, fascism is perceived as a top-down hierarchical structure where the few impose their will on the many. Now, it ends up like that, and that's why we think of it like that. But when you look at the fascist movements in Germany and in Italy and in other places, they actually came out of a movement of the people. We had in Germany, again, a massive problem, incredible inflation, economic collapse, military collapse. Germany in a terrible state because of the reparations imposed after the First World War. And along came a man who talked about hope, who talked about giving Germany its pride back and its standing in the world, and who talked about having something to believe in. And his name was Adolf Hitler. And he was, people forget, he was voted into power to start with. And with a massive wave of support from the people because of what they perceived him to stand for. And there was great unity. Obama talks about unity. Well, unity in and of itself is irrelevant. It's what the unity is behind. There was great unity in Germany behind Hitler and the Nazis for a long time until it suddenly dawned on them what they'd actually born. It wasn't a dream, it was a nightmare. Similar thing happened in Italy, a people's movement in terms of bringing Mussolini to power and stuff like that. When I see Obama talking about having a civilian national security force, when I see him talking about compulsory for school children and college students to do in effect national service or community service, not because they're inspired to, but because they're told to. It's compulsory. And many other things. You know, it doesn't feel good to me at all. And because it's being sold as hope, as something to believe in, as coming together, as unity, as giving America its pride back and all this stuff, some very unpleasant policies can be introduced under the guise of that, which only a few years down the road will a lot of people realize what they've actually signed up to. That's the danger, because he's got this. Well, if you're awake, he hasn't got the ability. He's an open book. I mean, he's the most openly fraudulent speaker and manipulator of the audience. But if you're not, then you can see that he can get people to believe in things because he has done. He's got them to believe in him when he's actually got no political record. His background in Chicago is full of dirty deals and supporting crooks like Tony Rezko and stuff, the slum landlord who got massive amounts of money from the Chicago state system to run public housing, and is now in jail because he defrauded the state out of a lot of money and also fraudulently was using corruption to get from businesses if they wanted to do business with the state, because he was controlling those organizations they had to do business with within the state. And Obama's right in the middle of this. And when I started to research his background, when you see his history in Chicago and the thought that he went through an entire primary campaign with Hillary Clinton and an entire election campaign with John McCain, and the mainstream media in America did not bring out anything but a tiny fraction of what there is to bring out about Barack Obama. People are who bought the Obama myth are going to be very, very disappointed and indeed very shocked in the next few years. And I suspect, Rebecca, that because he's going to have a good honeymoon period because of all the hype, I really do expect that they'll want to squeeze every second out of that honeymoon period, and things will start to kick on very fast once he's officially inaugurated in January.
You know, I've been watching. You know, of course they post a lot of different things about who he's choosing and who he's not choosing, and you know all of that good stuff and all the things that he's putting into place and It's just amazing to me. He's got some kind of a, and this just happened just a couple of days ago, where he was putting up an $850 billion package to supposedly, I guess, assist, you know, the United States in their financial thing. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm sorry, does he not understand what's really going on here with the financial aspect of this world? I mean, it's you know, he's like trying to pretend that it's business as usual. It's not going to be business as usual. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, when all of this stuff starts falling apart, what is the rest of the United States going to do? Because all of this is just, it's again, it's about what you talked about in the very beginning, which is, people perceive him as being some kind of a savior or whatever, but he's really just kind of, in a sense, regurgitating a lot of the other things. Well, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Well, those things can't be done. That's not the reality of the situation. It just can't be done.
Well, yeah, absolutely. When you look at his economic team, he has appointed a guy called Paul Adolf Volcker, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberg Group, three major groups within the network of global and American manipulation. He was the head of the Federal Reserve. To 87. He is an absolute insider. Another man who he's appointed is a guy called Timothy Geithner, Bilderberg Group, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, who's going to be the Treasury Secretary. These are all people who operate in the circle around a man called Robert Rubin. And he is someone who has been connected into the Clinton administration and connected into the whole network, as all these other people have, like Geithner, that has created the economic catastrophe, because that's what it is. We've not seen it become that yet, but that's what it's heading towards.
Sure.
So these people who have actually created the problem, here we go again, problem, reaction, solution, are now being appointed by Mr. Change Obama to offer the solutions to the problems they have themselves created, and it will be to change society in a way that suits this Orwellian agenda, including a movement to a world central bank, which is what I've been predicting for the best part of 20 years. Another guy that he's appointed to his election is economic team is a guy called Larry Summers, Bilderberg Group, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, who, when he was chief economist of the World Bank in economic team, is a guy called Larry Summers, Bilderberg Group, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, who, when he was chief economist of the World Bank in 1991, he sent out a memo to the bank, which eventually became public to his great embarrassment, in which he said that the bank should dump toxic waste in poor countries because the costs of the ensuing ill health and death would be lower. Now, this is a man that Mr. Change Obama has appointed to his economics team, along with all these other insiders connecting into people like George Soros. And I tell you, one of the greatest ironies, there are so many ironies about Obama and his presidency. The key man, as I said, behind him, his real mentor in Svengali, is this guy, Zbigniew Brzezinski. Now, Zbigniew Brzezinski was National Security Advisor to Jimmy Carter at the end of the 70s, and he has admitted publicly in an interview with the Paris magazine a few years ago that he, as National Security Advisor, started funding, arming, and training, quote, freedom fighters in Afghanistan to cause problems for the Soviet Union-controlled Afghanistan government in Kabul, the capital. And he says in this interview that he did that because he wanted to manipulate and entice the Soviet Union to invade Afghanistan to protect their government from this this challenge by what he would call today terrorists. It cost 1 million Afghan lives, that Soviet Union invasion of Afghanistan that followed, which seemed to matter nothing at all to Brzezinski, who said, well, we wanted to give the Soviet Union and our other superpower in the world at that time their Vietnam, and they got their Vietnam, so what's the problem? And of course, those, quote, freedom fighters, which he instigated, trained, and began funding, became known as the Mujahideen during the 10-year Soviet occupation of Afghanistan. Then also became known as the Taliban, and that's where what is alleged to be Al-Qaeda came out of. Now, here's the great irony, Rebecca. Barack Obama is saying we need to vastly increase the number of troops, including European troops, in Afghanistan to fight the Taliban, which were initially triggered, funded, and created in that form by the man behind Barack Obama, Zbigniew Brzezinski. This is what happens when you've got the pyramid with the two parties on either side of it, and you've also got an agenda. The agenda is for the centralization of global power in the hands of a tiny few people with a world government, world central bank, world army, microchip population, and a world currency, which would be all electronic, no physical cash. Now, the agenda is the key. That's the God. So you do anything that's necessary in that moment to advance that agenda. And so at one time, it suits the agenda to create the Mujahideen and the Taliban and bring Osama bin Laden out of the 51st state of America, one of many, called Saudi Arabia, to front the whole thing up with the resistance to the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. But a bit further down the line, it suits the agenda to go to war with them, your own creation. And people say, well, that's a contradiction. But it's not, because the agenda stops it being a contradiction, because both those apparent contradictory situations are connected by pursuit of the agenda and what most is effective in that way at that time. And at the moment, it's most effective from their point of view to send vast numbers of troops into Afghanistan to go for the Taliban. This is how it works. Once you know how it fits together and what the techniques are, what appear on the public stage to be vast contradictions are not contradictions at all.
I think that's probably part of what is going on when you look at the agendas that they've had in place, David, for many, many, many years. When they start putting these things together, all of these things sometimes take 20, 30, 40, 50 years before whatever their agenda is can be in place. And it's just amazing. Like yourself and other people have come on to my show and they've shared all of these secrets and all of these things that come out. And really it's about opening people's eyes and letting them know that this is, it's just not as it appears to be. Now, the other thing that I wanted to kind of go with you with on this is I'd like to get back to the children and the school age and the college children and stuff. What I would like to do, though, is just take a quick break, and then when we come back, I'd like to get into that aspect about how they're supposed to be servicing and serving by, you know, community service and all of that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you guys, hang on. We're going to be right back with more of David in just a moment. All right. Welcome back, everyone. And again, we have David Icke with us. And we have been very, very busy in the first part of this hour talking about Barack Obama. Again, I urge you to visit David's website. That's davidicke.com. And David, I was reading the article, which is davidicke.com/Obama, where you wrote on that, and you were talking about how they want to have our children kind of be mandatory, if you will, and it said so on the website, devote some of their time to community service, and they wanted this for older children as well as for college students. And then I guess they got a lot of flack and they changed some of the verbiage and to come back. And that really is, when you think about it, that really is a mechanism where they are trying to unify the country by saying, oh, let's all get together and let's do something really, really good for each other by having our children do this and do that. And they're making many, many things mandatory. And again, it's watching the financial information. It's watching who he's picking and all of these things. And I was like, as soon as he got elected, all these things started to just become very crystal clear to me that he just has an agenda, just like everyone else has an agenda. And he's being manipulated just like the rest of the world basically is being manipulated. It's all been about manipulation and mind control and that kind of stuff. So, you know, if you'd like to take the next few minutes, maybe talk a little bit more about that, about the manipulation, the mind control, as well as maybe what people can really start looking at to expand that so that they can themselves get out of that and look at it from a different perspective.
Obama is a front man. All presidents are front men. And they stay there so long as they do as they're told, and they are selected on the basis that they will do as they're told and that they can sell the policies of those behind them. So when you look, again, it's so important to look back at Obama's history in Chicago to see that this man will do anything to get elected and to get what passes for power, and it's only a power of a certain kind, because the real power's in the shadows behind him. And as I said earlier, he's got this honeymoon period. He's particularly got enormous numbers of young people behind him. And just like demagogues do. And he's going to be used, and he will willingly be used to use these words like hope and coming together and a new America and all the rest of it to get these young people to form together and older people too to form together in networks and organizations which are designed to actually be enforcers of the people in general. So Hitler had the Hitler Youth Movement. They all do this stuff, and it's kind of interesting. Here's a quote from a Zbigniew Brzezinski book, which was written before Obama even ran for president. He says in this book, needed social reassessment can be encouraged by deliberate civil education. It stresses the notion of service to a higher cause than oneself. As some have occasionally urged, a major step in that direction would be the adoption of an obligatory period of national service for every young adult, perhaps involving a variety of congressionally approved domestic or foreign good works. If you read Brzezinski's books before Obama was even heard of on a national stage, Obama's running on his policies. And when you also go further back to the 1960s and a Brzezinski book called Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era, he says this in that book. The technotronic era involves the gradual appearance of a more controlled society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite, unrestrained by traditional values. Soon it will be possible to assert almost continuous surveillance over every citizen and maintain up-to-date complete files containing even the most personal information about the citizen. These files will be subject to instantaneous retrieval by the authorities. He wrote that 40 years ago, and he's been working for the networks to bring that about ever since. And he also says this is very relevant to the Obama presidency. Today, again, 40 years ago, today we are again witnessing the emergence of transnational elites whose ties cut across national boundaries. It is likely that before long the social elites of most of the more advanced countries will be highly internationalist or globalist in spirit and outlook. The nation state is gradually yielding its sovereignty. Further progress will require greater American sacrifices, in other words, giving its sovereignty away, more intensive efforts to shape a new world monetary structure. That's what this crash is all about now.
Sure.
Will have to be undertaken with some consequent risk to the present relatively favorable American position. And what does Obama say? America's going to have to make sacrifices to solve all these problems and rebuild itself. And of course, as I've been saying in my books for goodness knows how many years, the war on the nation state, which Brzezinski was articulating there 40 years ago, is required to bring about what the aim is, which is a global centralized dictatorship run by a world government whose decisions are imposed by a world army. And of course, if you're going to have a world government that is dictating to the planet, which is what globalization is all about, that's just this thing unfolding in front of our eyes, then you cannot have superpowers that can have the military and financial might to say to the world government, we're not doing that. So, as I said years ago, around the time of the invasion of Iraq, they are using America to destroy America. That's the idea. That whole period of the Bush 8 years was about completing the process, or virtually completing it, Obama's supposed to complete it, of destroying America in the sense that we know America, militarily, and of course we're now seeing it financially. So when America is destroyed financially, militarily, etc., in terms of being a superpower, it can then be assimilated into this global centralized superstate as it never could in its all-powerful military and economic might. So this is what it's about. This is what it's doing. Now, what Obama's being brought in to do is to sell as coming together a new world, in the sense that he's been talking about, the end of America as a nation state as we know it. And this includes absorbing America into a North American Union, first of all with Canada and Mexico, and then expanding down into Central and South America, just as we've got the European Union. In Europe now, 70 to 75% of the laws that are imposed on British people are originating from the European Union and not the national parliament. And if a law is made in the European Union that is at odds with a law made in the British Parliament law is invalid and has to be withdrawn. That's the level of centralized power we have already, and that's what they want with this North American Union. The end of the dollar, that's why they're attacking the dollar. They want the end of the dollar, and they want a new North American currency to replace the American dollar, the Canadian dollar, and the peso. So Obama is the man who's being brought in with the silver tongue, i.e. reading someone else's words on autocue, to sell this final destruction of America as not the final destruction of America, but the new America, the new way forward, everyone coming together in peace and harmony and all that stuff. If only that was true, but it isn't. It's a cover story for pushing this agenda on to very close to its ultimate end.
Well, and so that being said, what is your consensus? What do you think? I mean, it's already happened as the European Union. What do you think that people here in the United States and America can do that would maybe deflect some of what's going on? Is there anything that can be done with this, David? Whether it be in the Americas or the rest of the world, because it really is moving into that. It's the statement that you made, you create the problem, and then it's the reaction, and then we're going to be the savior. We're going to come and fix it. Yep. They are the causing all of this. And I'm really pretty dumbfounded that people can't see that they're doing that. I mean, here in the United States, just to give you a really quick example, you know, here a few months ago, gas just absolutely went outrageously high here. All of a sudden, it dropped right back down and hadn't seen prices like this in many years. Now, all of a sudden, we don't hear that, but we have other issues going on, right? We don't hear about that. The gas just keeps dropping and dropping. Now, all of a sudden, the gas is going back up, and OPEC is going to stop, you know, production. And you're going, can you people not see the yo-yo that they're doing? They try to keep people in this state of frustration, this state of not knowing, not understanding. And here it goes. It just goes on and on and on. What can we do?
Well, there's different levels of this. If you look at a purely, if you like, 5 cents level, physical level, everyday experience level, if we look at the numbers, the number of those who are knowingly manipulating this agenda into place are tiny, tiny. Compared with the global population, tiny in terms of the American population, so the only way that they can impose their will upon the vast majority is to divide and rule the vast majority and to put them in a state of fear so that they are looking outside of themselves. This is what happens when people are in fear. They look outside of themselves to other people to protect them from what they've been manipulated to fear, and i.e., I've got a problem, tell me the solution. And you're giving your power away all the time. Dividing and ruling people on the fault lines of religion, political persuasion, income bracket, color, and all the rest of it, which Obama is really, really going to exploit. This is not a man who is racism is wrong. He's going to really exploit those divisions. You watch in the next few years, so these fault lines are what divides and rules the majority so the few can manipulate them and play them off against each other. And the general population is, A, in a state of fear and confusion because of what's going on, and B, at war with itself, blaming each other and trying to impose their belief systems on each other in religions and stuff like that, and the fault lines of race, all these things I've talked about. So number one, we need to grow up, start to become adult, and start to realize that these fictitious, fake fault lines of division do not have to be there. We allow them to be there, and if we go on judging people and dividing with other people on the basis of race, religion, income bracket, culture, age bracket, whatever, then America, the world in general, but we're talking about America here, is going to be divided and ruled into a fascist dictatorship within a short number of years. If we can grow up enough to stop fighting with each other over these irrelevant differences and unite behind the thing that affects us all and also affects our children and grandchildren, which is basic freedom and basic rights to live our lives as we see fit without imposition by the state, then we're starting to get a chance, because this whole system can only operate and can only function with the cooperation of the people in general. It can't function otherwise. Okay, Obama stands up outside the White House on day one and said, okay, we're going to do this. But what if the American people in vast numbers say we're not doing that? There is no power. Obama has no power except the power the people give to him and people in other countries give to their, quote, leaders every day. And I'm a great believer in the Gandhian approach of non-violent, non-cooperation with the systems that control and impose themselves upon us. We don't have to accept this. We don't have to have people, for instance, having their homes foreclosed and repossessed when they can't pay their mortgages for no fault of their own. You know, why aren't thousands of people getting together to form groups that will not allow people to have their homes foreclosed, that won't allow the people in to do it? There's thousands and millions of us. There's a handful of these people that are knocking on the door and saying, we're taking your house away. Why are we not, are people going so lamely and allowing this stuff when the power is within the people? Why? Fear of the consequences of challenging the state, and, well, it's not my house being foreclosed, so it's not my problem. Freedom is everybody's problem. As that pastor said in Nazi Germany, first they came for the Jews, and I was not a Jew, so I did nothing. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I was not a trade unionist, so I did nothing. Then they came for the communists, and I was not a communist, so I did nothing. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. This is what they're doing now, Rebecca. They're picking off different levels of society, one by one, and the other groups in society are saying, well, it's not my problem. Well, it is our problem. And when we start to realize that, and we come together in the numbers that we have to stop cooperating with this system in infinite ways that we can, the system will not be able to function, and we'll see where the real power is. That's on a physical level. There's many other things we can do as well. But the key level to all of this is consciousness, becoming conscious. And this is the way my life, since I started to wake up myself 20 years ago, my life has been through some very clear phases of incredible synchronicity, where I'm being taken to information and taken to situations so I understand how it works. First of all, I had years of understanding through incredible synchronicity around the world how the structure works that controls people, if you like, in the physical realm, in the everyday world we experience. Then I realized that there were other dimensional levels to this, which I also went into, synchronistically the information came to me. But over the last like two years, and so massively now, the whole movement and synchronicity of my life is all going into the nature of reality and what this reality is that we're experiencing. And what you realize is that what we call the physical world is in effect a projection. It's like it's a three-dimensional, illusory three-dimensional projection, but it's like a projection on a movie screen. And by the time it hits the physical world, the one we experience all the time, the deal's done. It's already a done deal, just as the movie is when it hits the screen. It really is no good standing by the screen, screaming at the movie screen, and demanding that it changes, because by then, there ain't going to change. You've got to get back to the projection room and see where it's being projected from and change the reel. And it's being projected out of what we call, and psychologists call, the collective unconscious mind. That's what's projecting it. And that's where we need to become conscious. And we need to get out of what we call mind, because mind is the program and is the movie that we're experiencing. Mind is a very, very low level of awareness. It's childlike, computer-like. That's why people who are in mind, which is the vast majority of people on the planet, because the whole system is designed to put you in mind from the first time you start entering this world as a child, because it's a computer-like in its nature, very much along the lines of that portrayed in the Matrix movies, you get people who are in mind who are incredibly predictable. This is one great reason, Rebecca, why these guys can manipulate vast numbers of people, because they know that if they can hold them in a state of mind as opposed to true consciousness, then they can pretty well predict that if you put in data here, problem, you're going to get reaction out here at the end of it. And this is why you all over the world you see this. And I've been to so many countries and experienced so many different cultures. Wherever you go, if you put a certain situation in, like we call it, you call it data if you like, you're going to get the same reaction. I don't care if they're black, white, or sky blue, pink, or Hindus, Jews, or Christians, or Muslims, or whatever, you get the same reaction, basically. Why? Because they're in mind, and they're in the same computer program. When we become conscious, which symbolically is moving into the heart rather than the head, and coming from a point of view of feeling, coming from the point of view of intuition, knowing rather than just thinking, then you can start to see through the program. You can start to see what mind cannot see, because mind is part of the program. Try telling this computer sitting in front of me something that is about consciousness and coming from a level of consciousness. It can't do it. It's a computer. It just reacts to data. That's what mind does. So we've got to start getting out of mind and into consciousness. And we do that by basically the process that I've gone through, and I see so many other people going through. It goes like this. The first key point, the most important thing, is to have an intent that you want to get out of mind and into consciousness. That intent is an incredibly powerful energy if you really mean it. And what then starts to happen is that energy of intent, it's like a magnetic energy, like all energy is, gets projected by your intent, and it draws to it other energy fields, people, places, ways of life, experiences, synchronicity, that draw to you what you need in terms of experience, information, and other things to break out of mind into true consciousness. What happens to a lot of people is when they make this intent, and this process starts, they look at some of the things that come towards them, which are people they often don't like, that give them very challenging experiences. Maybe their relationship ends, maybe they lose their job, whatever. And they think it's a real negative thing that's happened to them as a result of trying to become conscious. But what is happening? What's happening is that energy of intent is drawing towards you what you need to break the programs that enslave you in mind. And sometimes these are situations where you lose your job. Now, the status quo is not an option. You've got to have movement in your life because of what's just happened, and that movement will start to take you in another direction. Some people might come into your life that are very unpleasant and give you great challenging experiences, but what they're doing is they're bringing to the surface many of the things, the emotional programs, the fear programs, which you can then face because they're putting them in your face by what they're doing, and you can break them. All these things have been happening to me over 20 years in coordination with this information that I've been uncovering. It's been a personal journey as well as a collective journey, a researching journey, if you like. And what happens as you break these programs, these mind programs, the energetic fields that you're starting to project change in their vibrational state, and so they stop drawing towards you change in their vibrational state and so they stop drawing towards you in what you call your life and daily experiences, the same people, situations, and all the rest of it. Instead of that, new people come into your life, new experiences, new directions, and these directions take you down the road towards consciousness and towards breaking up these mind programs. And as this starts to happen, you start to see the mind program that you were in before and therefore couldn't see, and you go, it's so obvious. Why didn't I see it?
Oh, my gosh, David. That is so awesome.
You were in the program. You were in the program. Now you're out of it. You're in it physically. You're in this world physically, but now you're not of it in terms of the point you're observing it from. And that's the change that needs to take place. And it's taking place in vast numbers of people worldwide.
And what I want to do here now is we need to take a break. We're at the top of the hour, and when we come back, we're going to have some other affiliates join us. And I want to continue this because this kind of gets along with some of the other things that we talked about prior to you coming onto the show today, what we wanted to cover. So for the rest of you, sit back and enjoy, and we'll be back in just a moment. All right, everyone, welcome back. And for those of you who are just joining us, we are here visiting with David Icke today. And please understand that the first hour will be available tomorrow. It will be up on the archives. They're free of charge. Just go ahead and go to the website journeyswithrebecca.com so you can listen to the entire message that David has for us today. David, we left off in the last hour here talking while we've just moved in from one thing into the other, which is I like what you said, get out of mind and into consciousness. You know, and it's very funny because you were talking, not funny in a ha-ha way, but similar experiences I've been going through myself and just looking at the world and going, you know, everything just seems kind of surreal. I have many, many more days like that than it ever used to
yes.
be. You just kind of drive down the road going, why am I even doing this? This is just you're not even needed, or you know, it's just all these things that come in, you know, as you're experiencing this and you're going through, and it can be a little confusing. And believe it or not, I've had other people that have shared the same thing with me. So this is right along the lines of what people now can put into some kind of thought process of, okay, now I have a better understanding of what I'm experiencing, because somewhere along the way they've had that intent to get out of mind and into consciousness. And that being said, you know, this whole thing, like you said, is you know, when I first watched, believe it or not, the Matrix movie, I got done and I went, oh my God, I think that is more true than what anybody even understands. Because, and it may not be identical, but I think it's very, very interesting. Because one of the other things, too, David, is that there's a lot of things that have been presented to us right in our face, and we all think of it as sci-fi or fantasy or whatever. But what's the best way to hide the truth? Is to put it in front of people. Yeah, exactly.
If you take the Matrix and the Matrix movies to be mind, and those outside of the Matrix to be consciousness, that's quite a good analogy of the way the whole thing works. They didn't use that analogy in the movies themselves, but if you do use that analogy, it's very close to what we were talking about before the break.
So now that gets along to, are we now talking about your version of the nature of reality? Would you like to go into that next before we go in and answer some questions for people today, or what would you like to do with that?
Well, this direction that my life's been going for the last few years, and massively so now. I mean, I'm going into some real deep stuff, real pushing the cutting edge forward miles at the moment in terms of the subjects that we're talking about, in terms of reality and what this reality is and how it's created, how it's projected. I've become aware over the last few years since my research has moved on, and not just my research, but I've had a little bit of information, and suddenly it's triggered an awareness that's just overpowered me. And oh God, yes, I can see it now. That's how it is. And what that is, it's the memory coming back, because we all know this stuff, but we are locked into a fraction of our consciousness, which we call the conscious mind, and therefore we're not aware of the vast, enormous amount of information and awareness that we have in a non-conscious state. Anyway, and I began to realize that the internet is very, very similar in theme to this reality, and that what we call the physical body is actually a computer. A very, very sophisticated holographic computer. And not just a computer like the one on the desk in front of me now, which I have to put data in and then it reacts to it, as it's programmed to react to it. But also it has the ability, in terms of the body, to be what they call biological computers. In other words, they don't just react to data, they can assess it and make decisions on it. That's what we call evolution, you see, evolution of the body. The body computer is taking in information from its environment all the time, and it is reacting to that information and changing in terms of that information. Very simple example is the way the immune system works and reacts to events, and the way the body changes its temperature when it goes into a cold place or whether it goes into a warm place. It's all the time reacting to the environment, because it's a computer and it's a highly advanced one, and it's created to do that. And if you do not impose consciousness upon the computer, i.e. if you don't have a computer operator, then the computer will run itself. And this is what I have seen more and more, the more I've awakened and the more I've become conscious, that the vast, vast numbers of people on this planet are in computer mode. The consciousness level of them is not taking part in the decision-making process. The computer's running the show. And that's why people are so unbelievably predictable. When psychologists say they can break down human personalities into 12 archetypes and combinations of them, well, you can't do that with consciousness, which is all possibility, but you can do it with computer programs, and that's what they're assessing, the computer level of reality. Now, if you fall into that and you run your life in computer reality, then those in the shadows, beyond the Obamas and beyond the Bushes, the ones ultimately controlling those people, they understand that it's a computer reality. And therefore, they know that if they put certain data in, i.e. world events or situations, current countries, whatever, they're going to get a certain reaction from the computer level of perception. For instance, part of the computer program is a reaction mechanism that we call fight or flight. which is that when you face danger, you either hit the guy or run, right? Well, actually, if you're in consciousness, there are other possibilities to slugging the guy or legging it.
Right.
But not to the computer level of reality in fight or flight, which is what most people react with. So this is just an example of what I'm talking about. And therefore, what the computer is doing is because the if you look at the makeup, well, the makeup of the planet, never mind the makeup of the human body, it is a crystalline structure. It's crystal. It's a crystal. And every membrane of every cell, and we have trillions of them, is a crystalline substance, right? So and DNA is crystalline. So what do they use to in transmission receiving, in broadcast technology, etc., of all kinds? Crystals. The crystal chip, the silicon chip, and all the rest of it. And so what the body computer is doing is picking up the projected reality, just like a television in the front room picks up a broadcast signal and turns it into pictures on the screen. People say, tell me about television. They say, oh, well, it's moving pictures on the screen. Well, yes, it is. But the only place that television exists in that form is on the screen. Everywhere else, it's broadcast vibrational fields and electronic circuits, etc. People say, tell me about the internet. Oh, yeah, well, it's websites and it's graphics and it's colors and it's words and it's pictures on the screen. Yes. Exists in that form is on the screen. Everywhere else, it's broadcast vibrational fields and electronic circuits, etc. People say, tell me about the internet. Oh, yeah, well, it's websites and it's graphics and it's colors and it's words and it's pictures on the screen. Yes, it is. But the only place the internet exists in that form is on the screen. Everywhere else, it is mathematical codes and electronic circuits, etc. And our screen is the body, particularly the brain, which is decoding broadcast frequencies into holographic pictures, which we perceive to be the solid world around us. Now, the reason that quantum physics has found that the idea is that everything physical is made of atoms, but quantum physicists have found that the atoms have no solidity. They're just pockets of energy. So how can something that has no solidity make up this apparently solid world? It can't, because the world is not solid. It's just an illusion that's decoded in our brain by our body computer from a non-physical frequency field state into an apparently physical three-dimensional state. Just in simple terms, what a computer or a television is doing. So, and if no consciousness is involved to take a step back and look at this from another perspective, then the computer just goes on decoding the what I call the cosmic internet. And that's what people, vast majority of people, call life. They're just programs following the program, just like the woman in the red dress in the Matrix movie that was a digital insert into the program that looked as human as you and me. Now, once you start to get conscious, you start to see the program. And when you see the program, then we can start doing something about it. And so this awakening, which is absolutely happening as people are now more and more becoming more conscious, that's what's happening when they start to see the program and the world for what it is rather than what they thought it was when they were in it and of it. And when I started on this journey nearly 40 years ago, which started before this, but one key moment in the very, very early days was I went to see a psychic lady because I was feeling a presence around me wherever I went. And when I was in a room alone, it always felt as if there was someone there. And I went to see a psychic lady, not telling her anything about this, just to see if she would pick up what the heck was happening around me. And she went into psychic mode in March 1990, and started telling me that I was going to go out on a world stage and eventually be, quote, world famous, putting out great secrets, and that I would write books and all this stuff, which I thought was, you know, come on, you're having a laugh. You know, I'm a television presenter. Leave me alone. What's going on? But it's all kind of happened. Now, the reason I tell that story is that another thing that was given to me at that time through the psychic was there is going to be a spiritual revolution in his lifetime because, in effect, a vibrational change is coming which is going to wake people up and act like a spiritual alarm clock and wake people up from their amnesia. The amnesia is being caught in the mind program. My first book, which, as a result of those experiences, which I wrote in 1990 and was published in 1991, was called Truth Vibrations. And it was called Truth Vibrations because I was talking about this vibrational change that was coming. Now, there seemed no sign of it at the time, but having traveled to nearly 50 countries in the last 20 years, and more so now, I'm seeing it ever more blatantly, there is an awakening. It's not the majority, it's not anything like the majority yet, but it is a increasingly vast number of people. And what that process is people, helped by this vibrational change, are becoming conscious. The mind program, the concrete program, is breaking down. And what that means is, because consciousness is starting to become part of the perception process, the way the body computer decodes reality now has another level of input, another level of perception, another input into that decoding process, and thus what we're perceiving from the decoding process is changing. We're seeing things we didn't see before because consciousness is now allowing us to see. We are in this such a fantastic time where, yes, you know, we've got all these things going on with the program trying to control us more and more to protect itself from this awakening. Because of the nature of the program dominates the mainstream media, we're seeing the program events and the program unfolding all the time on the television news and in the newspapers and in our daily lives, but not in the media, because they wouldn't understand it if it bit them on the backside. Most mainstream journalists, the vast majority, is this awakening that's going on quietly out of the public domain, most of it, which is becoming and teasing people awake. And so we're in a fantastic time enormous interest in terms of what's happening, an enormous potential for true change, not Obama's change, but true change from a mind-controlled, a mind-programmed world to a conscious world, in which, in a conscious world, you don't need laws to say you will not murder. Mind needs that, because it's stupid. Consciousness would not even think of harming another human being, because it understands that we're all one. We're all expressions of one consciousness. To hurt another is to hurt yourself. It's ridiculous. Consciousness can see that. You don't need laws to say you can't harm the environment. Mind needs that, because it's stupid. Consciousness wouldn't dream of harming the planet, because the planet is part of the oneness too. And so it's a complete transformation of perception, which by definition will transform the experienced world that we come here to experience. So there are many really wonderful things going on, and we're getting closer and closer to understanding how this reality is generated, and therefore how we can generate a different reality, and as well as the unpleasant things which Obama and people like that represent.
Well, and I have to tell you, David, that this energy that you talk about, it's a vibrational shift. And interestingly enough, is first of all, I agree with you 150% on that. That more and more people are coming out saying, "Gosh, I feel like, you know, time is changing. Like things that, you know, my senses are different, and like it's speeding up. Like I feel like I'm vibrating sometimes." I mean, all of these comments that I get from people. It's just amazing, and you just kind of go, well, that's part of it. There is a new energy, if you will, or a new vibration, or certainly the whatever you want to call it. Some people call it like a veil that's kind of been lifted, or the blanket, so to speak, has now become just a sheet instead of a heavy blanket, and they can sense more about what's going on. And it really is. It in all of its ugliness on parts of it, there's also all of this other stuff that's coming in that really it can be changed.
It can be changed.
By honoring the vibrational shifts, and by recognizing that this is very, very real, these vibrational, the consciousness. And, you know, you were talking about people looking at other people. There's times, David, seriously, I've looked at people. And, of course, you know, your first thought is, oh, something's wrong with my eyes. And I've looked at people, and all of a sudden they kind of, like, glitch. Like you watch something in the movies and it glitches, you know?
Yep.
And it like, doesn't stay on. Like, your computer will do that. It'll glitch, and things get that wavy, strange look to it before it, you know, recaptures itself. I've actually witnessed that in the last couple of years. And your first thought is, wow, that's pretty bizarre.
Yeah, it's only bizarre from the perception of reality that we're given from cradle to grave by
exactly.
science that, you know, doesn't know its backside from its elbow.
Right.
Science that, you know, doesn't know its backside from its elbow.
Right.
What you're talking about, I see myself and I hear other people's experiences all over the world. And the thing about time is interesting. You know, when people say there is no time, and people think, well, you know, just excuse me why I disappear up my bum trying to understand that. What do you mean there's no time? Of course there is. There was yesterday and there's now and there's today. No. There's only present. There's only the present, what you might call the present.
Right.
Because we're decoding the program at that present time, right? And as we decode the program, and a sequence of events unfolds as a result of us decoding the program, it appears, because one sequence follows another, that there is a movement into the future. There isn't. We're just decoding the program present time. The idea of past, present, and future is illusory. And it's an illusion of the time track, of the matrix. Once you move into consciousness, then by definition, because of the process I talked about a few minutes ago, where consciousness now starts to affect the way that we decode reality, decode the program, by definition, because time, the time illusion, is part of the program, our perception of time and our interaction with what we call time is going to change. It's got to, because we're not decoding time like other people are decoding time. We're still you know slam bang in the program. So when Einstein made the point that I'm paraphrasing him here, but if you put your finger into a saucepan of boiling water, time seems to pass very slowly. And if you're in the company of a beautiful woman, as he put it, then time seems to pass very fast, because time doesn't exist. It's only our relationship to a perception of something we call time, which is a sequence of events. And something we'd like to be over tends to seem to, you know, take
drag
a long
on.
Time.
Yeah.
Drag on. Something we're enjoying seems to go quickly because it's a different relationship to time in the experience that we're having, and therefore the state of consciousness we're in at the time we're having these different experiences. Our relationship to what we call time is absolutely going to change. And I tell you what, we've seen nothing yet. It's important that we get this information out, because then when people experience these things, they're not so frightened, because they have an understanding of what's going on, and it's not a bad thing. It's a great thing. It's setting us free. Wonderful, wonderful time. And you know, it's interesting. You know, you realize that you can see the same thing from different perspectives, and they appear to be at odds with each other, but both are true. It's just the perspective from which you're looking at it from. And so we can see the collapse of the money system and the collapse of the system in general, which they are instigating. We can see that on one level as a real bad thing, because it's manipulating and taking away what we have believed to be our security and our sense of security. But let's go back a little while to what I was saying earlier. When you put out an intent that you want to change, that you want to become conscious, then what happens is that vast changes take place in your life, often depending on the power of your intent, because that energy of intent draws to you the experiences and the people and the situations you need to break the enslavement of mind and enter consciousness, right? Now, collectively, if you want to look at it from another perspective, which is just as much validity as the other one, you can see the collapse of the financial system and the collapse of the system that we have seen as our security, actually our enslavement, if we only realized, as a collective version of that individual experience that I was talking about just now. The collective projection is changing. Collective energetic state is changing, and therefore the old construct that the old energetic state was creating and holding together, what we call the system, is now withdrawing that cement to hold it together, because vibrationally it's changing and it's no longer syncing with the system. And so what can happen to the system? What must happen to the system? It must collapse, because a new energy is creating a new construct of reality. And what we're looking at this time is when you have a dam and it's holding back water. If you leave it alone, then the water will be calm and just sit there, and that's fine. But over a period of time, the dam starts to get undermined. It starts to become less and less solid and together. Now, that period takes a very, very, very long time. Eventually, you see cracks appear. Now, once the cracks start to appear, it can be a very short time before the whole dam collapses. And what happens when the dam collapses is the water cascades down the valley. It's in total chaos and confusion, or apparently so, until eventually the water finds calmness and balance again, harmony, in the new situation that it's found itself in. A new reality. We are now symbolically in that point where the dam is bursting, and that water is starting to cascade. And we're in that period of confusion and chaos as the old breaks down, so the new can emerge. And if we hold that thought, hold that awareness, then some of the things that are going to happen as this soul system collapses are not going to be as frightening. In fact, we can start on one level at least to welcome them, because we have the understanding that what has been enslaving us, we're actually watching collapse, so that the new, the conscious world can emerge from that transition. So on one level, yes, I'm been exposing the manipulation and the stuff for 20 years, and I'll still do it because people need to know about it. But there are these all these other very, very positive elements to what's going on if you see them from another perspective.
Right, and we talked about that and before the beginning of the show, David. And when what I'd like to do now is to, I know that you're still doing some refinement. You still have some other information that you're gathering. But I would absolutely be delighted to have you come back and talk about that aspect of it at a later time. I know you're going to be traveling a lot here
yeah.
in the over the next few months, and we're going to get into all of that here in just a little bit. But it's just absolutely, I cannot tell you what a delight this is the information that you're sharing with people. I can hear it literally click into a lot of people, and this is what's going to make it fabulous. It really is. And your words are so important. Your information is so important. And they need to keep hearing this over and over again to break that cycle of programming that is going on and that is, you know, still going to continue. And but the point is that we all have an opportunity here, and this is a very delightful time, an auspicious time to be here at this time in order to create what I like to call a new paradigm and mm-hmm. of what it really could be for all of us. And wouldn't that just be delightful? To live how we were supposed to live.
Yeah, the point that consciousness comes from is all possibility. You
yes.
know, there's this great line in the Matrix, first Matrix movie, where the Morpheus character, and again, I'm paraphrasing, says to the Neo character about the agents, they can do this and they can do that, and you can unleash whole, guns full of bullets at them and not even get close to hitting them because they're so fast. But then he says, but they still live in a world based on rules, and therefore they can never be as based on rules, and therefore they can never be as fast as you can be, because Neo was symbolic, which of course was a move the letters around, and it was one, the oneness. Neo was symbolic of consciousness. The way I look at the movie anyway, and you know, people will have different symbols because there's lots of ways of looking at the Matrix movies, but from my point of view, Neo was consciousness, and because he was consciousness, he was able to operate in a world that wasn't based on rules, and the Matrix world, the mind world, what is it all about? It's all about rules and regulations. And what are rules and regulations? They're limitations. So we live in a world in which from cradle to grave we are fed the mantra, the mind control program called limitation. You can't, that's not possible, all the rest of it. And once you enter consciousness, anything becomes possible because you realize that this world is a projection. It's not solid. It's a projection, and the projection can be changed. And therefore what we call miracles are not miracles at all. They're just changing the projection.
I love it.
Please. And what where I'm going now, and I'm not really going to be able to talk about this at length for maybe another year, but where I'm going now, where life's taking me, it's the most incredible places beyond this reality. To understand this, and you know, I've been saying for years, and the more that I understand, the more I know it's true. When we finally understand what this reality is, and where it's coming from, and what's projecting it, we are gonna laugh for weeks ponder on how we thought it was and how we interacted with it before. There are many people in the world that I would rather not be, but right up there at the top of the Premier League are these guys behind the manipulation. I feel sorry for them because there's a tidal wave of energy coming. It's going to wash them away, and one day they'll become conscious. But it will be it will be more of a challenge for them because they've got such a greater a chasm to leap. But they'll become conscious. Everyone will become conscious eventually, and then we'll realize there are no limitations in terms of what we can do. Anything's possible. It's just a manifestation of consciousness. You know, okay, everybody who's listening, just think of something now. Think of a blue car. You've created it. And if you know what you're doing, you can manifest it because it's a projection. And you just take it from the subconscious world, what we call the subconscious realm, and you project it into the holographic realm, we call the five sense world, and suddenly it's a blue car. I mean, the idea of scarcity, the idea of some must have, therefore some must not have, is bloody nonsense. It's just the way the program wants us to see the world, so for some to have, some must have not. Abundance is just a new understanding of way. When we drop the limitations and the chains of the idea of scarcity, and we start to know that abundance is just a projection away. It's a wonderful time to be alive. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else and anyone else doing anything else than me doing this and being here now.
Oh, that is absolutely fabulous. And I love what you're saying, and I believe what you're saying, and I know I should say what you're saying. And I hope that the people that are out there listening will grasp a hold of that and start reaching for that for themselves. In the meantime, David, we have to take a short break. When we come back, are you ready for some questions now?
Yep. No
problem. All right, you guys, for the rest of you, hang on. We're going to be right back with more Journeys with Rebecca and David Icke right after this. All right, everyone, welcome back. And you are listening to Journeys with Rebecca, and we are here with my very special guest, David Icke. And again, his website is davidicke.com. Please go check it out because there's a wealth of information there. Well, David, you know, you talked about our perception of time and how, you know, like a lot of people at work, it seems like their day just keeps dragging on and on and on. But maybe when they get home from work and they might be visiting with friends or whatever, all of a sudden it's like time to go to bed. And
yep.
Time goes by really fast. And that's the way this has been with me and you today. It just went by extraordinarily fast. But we do have some questions that the audience did write in. And I have four of them here. And if you would, I would like to go ahead and present those to you right now.
Okay.
Okay, now this first one is from Barbara. And she writes this. It's as though our planet is being systematically changed into a more habitable place for another race and less habitable for humans and animals. The race that is taking over the planet Earth must not need air to breathe, chemtrails, air pollution, or food to eat, GMO, brand foods, pesticides, herbicides. Everything that they are doing will harm the human body, but it must be something they will be able to thrive in. Are we being squeezed off the planet?
I think there's a lot of truth in that in terms of the ambition and the agenda. As I was saying earlier, when I started off on this journey 20 years ago, consciously started on it anyway, I've been on it all my life when I look back, I first of all was taken synchronistically through all the five sense level of it and the human level of it and all the rest of it. And then I started to realize, and the whole synchronicity of my life was taking me in this direction very fast at that time, that there was actually a non-human element to this whole story. But I emphasize again, this non-human element is still part of the projection. It's not the projector. It's not projecting this reality. It is a part of the projection, another level of the program. And so I started going back to find a time when this human structure of control began, and you can go back and back and back and back, but you know, I got comfortably back to the time of the Crusades and the 1200s, etc., the creation of secret societies like the Knights Templar and the Knights of Malta, as they're now known, and I kept going back, and I'm eventually thousands of years BC, and you start to pick up a theme all around the world, not just in one place, although ancient Sumer and Babylon, which is now, of course, Iraq and Mesopotamia, seems to be a really, really significant place in relation to this. And you pick up the accounts all over the world of an interbreeding between a non-human and a human race to create a hybrid bloodline. And not always, but there's a very, very significant theme of a reptilian non-human race, which you find, like I say, all over the world. And what I've begun to understand is that this reptilian element, although they do exist in the five sense world, which we decode in this tiny frequency range we call visible light, which is a tiny frequency range that our eyes can access in terms of what we can see. But outside of that is infinite numbers of other dimensions of reality. And just outside of visible light, i.e. just outside the frequency that we can see, these reptilian entities, the key ones in terms of the manipulation, exist. But because they're vibrating to a different resonance to visible light, they can't interact with this world directly. So they have created hybrid bloodlines, which are in part human, but also to a very large degree reptilian. And you know, people hearing this for the first time will go, "Oh, hold on a second, that's ridiculous." But hold on, we have massive reptilian genetics in every human body. The oldest part of the human brain is called the R-complex, the reptilian brain. And that's where we get fight or flight from, funnily enough. And that's where we get all these survival mechanisms from. And when you think about it, you know, if you can put people in a state of survival mode, you're locking them into the reptilian brain, because that's where the survival process and reactions come from. And there's a big relevance in that.
All right, everyone, welcome back. And you are listening to Journeys with Rebecca, and we are here with my very special guest, David Icke. And again, his website is davidicke.com. Please go check it out, because there's a wealth of information there. Well, David, you know, you talked about our perception of time and how, you know, like a lot of people at work, it seems like their day just keeps dragging on and on and on, but maybe when they get home from work and they might be visiting with friends or whatever, all of a sudden it's like time to go to bed. And it's, yep, time goes by really fast. And that's the way this has been with me and you today. It just went by extraordinarily fast. But we do have some questions that the audience did write in. And I have four of them here. And if you would, I would like to go ahead and present those to you right now.
Okay.
Okay, now this first one is from Barbara. And she writes this. It's as though our planet is being systematically changed into a more habitable place for another race and less habitable for humans and animals. The race that is taking over the planet Earth must not need air to breathe, chemtrails, air pollution, or food to eat, GMO, brand foods, pesticides, herbicides. Everything that they are doing will harm the human body, but it must be something they will be able to thrive in. Are we being squeezed off the planet?
I think there's a lot of truth in that, in terms of the ambition and the agenda. As I was saying earlier, when I started off on this journey 20 years ago, consciously started on it anyway, I've been on it all my life when I look back, I first of all was taken synchronistically through all the five sense level of it and the human level of it and all the rest of it. And then I started to realize, and the whole synchronicity of my life was taking me in this direction very fast at that time, that there was actually a non-human element to this whole story. But I emphasize again, this non-human element is still part of the projection. It's not the projector. It's not projecting this reality. It is a part of the projection, another level of the program. And so I started going back to find a time when this human structure of control began. And you can go back and back and back and back, but you know, I got comfortably back to the time of the Crusades and the 1200s, etc. The creation of secret societies like the Knights Templar and the Knights of Malta, as they're now known. And I kept going back, and I'm eventually thousands of years BC, and you start to pick up a theme all around the world, not just in one place, although ancient Sumer and Babylon, which is now, of course, Iraq, Mesopotamia, seems to be a really, really significant place in relation to this. And you pick up the accounts all over the world of an interbreeding between a non-human and a human race to create a hybrid bloodline. And not always, but there's a very, very significant theme of a reptilian non-human race, which you find, like I say, all over the world. And what I've begun to understand is that this reptilian element, although they do exist in the five sense world, which we decode in this tiny frequency range we call visible light, which is a tiny frequency range that our eyes can access in terms of what we can see. But outside of that is infinite numbers of other dimensions of reality. And just outside of visible light, i.e. just outside the frequency that we can see, these reptilian entities, the key ones in terms of the manipulation, exist. But because they're vibrating to a different resonance to visible light, they can't interact with this world directly. So they have created hybrid bloodlines, which are in part human, but also to a very large degree reptilian. And you know, people hearing this for the first time will go, "Oh, hold on a second, that's ridiculous." But hold on, we have massive reptilian genetics in every human body. The oldest part of the human brain is called the R-complex, the reptilian brain. And that's where we get fight or flight from, funnily enough. And that's where we get all these survival mechanisms from. And when you think about it, you know, if you can put people in a state of survival mode, you're locking them into the reptilian brain, because that's where the survival process and reactions come from. And there's a big relevance in that, I would suggest. You have a credit crunch, you're in survival mode, okay? You're in your reptilian brain. Fight or flight. What am I going to do? Panic. Yeah, so this war, same thing. So what I'm talking about with these hybrid bloodlines is there is a greater infusion of reptilian genetics in them than there is in the general population. And what this does, because in the end we see a physical body, but what we're looking at actually is a vibrational field, which we're decoding into what appears to be solid, but as physics has shown, is not. And because, therefore, there is a greater reptilian genetics, there is a greater vibrational compatibility between these particular hybrid bloodlines and these reptilian entities operating just outside of human sight. As a result, they can, quote, possess the mental and emotional faculties of these particular bloodlines much more powerfully and completely than they can with the general population. So when I talk about the Illuminati bloodlines, I'm actually talking about these hybrid bloodlines which have a much greater vibrational compatibility with the reptilian entities just outside of human sight, thus become perfect vehicles for those entities to manipulate this world while appearing to our five-sense sight to be human. So we look at the Bush family, we look at the British royal family, we look at the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and all these bloodline families, and because we're decoding through our computer the five sense level of reality, the visible light, we see their human level. But if we could see beyond that, if we could tease out our visual frequency range, we would see an entity that was anything but human overshadowing those people. It's interesting, I got a friend who's very much into the scientific community, and he has an associate who is not into my stuff at all, probably knows nothing about it. He is a scientist who, and I don't agree with what he's doing, but he's a scientist that's been doing a a research project to develop iris scanning technology for airports and stuff like that, you know. And what this has done in his last project, it led him to, under magnification, looking at 2,300 pairs of eyes. And he told my friend, again, not because my friend knew me, the reptilian connection that I'm writing about, he said he reckoned that about 4% of the eyes that he looked at were of, quote, reptilian type. And I think 4% is not a bad percentage of this bloodline. And the more it interbreeds with itself, the from their point of view, the more pure it is, and by pure I mean the more vibrationally compatible it is with the possessing entity. So this world is manipulated, it seems very clear, by non-human entities working through human bodies, human hybrid bodies, which we decode as human, and therefore we think, no, it's ridiculous that what that Ike fella is saying. But when you see the bigger picture, it starts to make logical sense. And they are manipulating this world to fit themselves. And maybe it is the fact that they're trying to change it in a way that they can then occupy it. But it's the program. It's still the program playing out. They're not all-powerful. They're not the source in the end of the control. The program is, and they're as much part of the program, therefore subject to the control, as anyone else is. And they're completely bloody non-conscious. They are. So they are absolutely computer programs. And funnily enough, I've got a great friend in South Africa, a Zulu shaman called Credo Mutwo, I talked to the other day on the phone. And when I spoke in South Africa in the late 90s for the first time, he contacted me through a third party and said, I've got to meet you. So I went to see him, and he said to me, he just read my book, The Biggest Secret, where I introduced the reptilian part of it for the first time. And he said to me, Mr. David, how do you know about the Chitahura? And he said to me, Mr. David, how do you know about the Chitahuri? And I said, I don't. Who are the Chitahuri? The Chitahuri translates in the Zulu as children of the serpent or children of the python. And the reptilian race manipulating humanity is fundamental in the history, the true history, the hidden history, the underground shamanistic history of Africa. And he said to me, if you want to understand the Illuminati, study the reptile. And it's interesting because I did do that. I went to reptile farms and alligator farms and crocodile farms. And you see something very, very interesting. I saw one exhibition, of crocodile behavior, where the guy was actually in the compound while the public were on the outside listening to him, and he had a stick in his hand, and he went over, and there was this massive crocodile in this shallow water, and he went through a sequence where he said, I'm going to do this and the crocodile will do this in response, right? And he did it, one thing, two things, three things, four things, five things, and everything he did, the crocodile reacted in exactly the same way that the guy said it would react, because it did it every time. Now, what else do we know that reacts the same every time you do the same thing? A computer. And it seems to me that reptilian genetics are more computer-like in their decoding of the program than even human genetics. The Illuminati, when you study them, are incredibly predictable and very callable in the way that they act, because they are so computer-like. And it's one reason why they are very impressive in terms of their intellect and the way that they manipulate the system. because they're so computer-like. I mean, computers can do not more than consciousness, but they can do more than mind can in terms of working things out and seeing things and assessing things and doing mathematics and all the rest of it. And in the same way, these reptilian bloodlines, the top notch of them anyway, are very good at that. But this is another thing. What's happened is the computer is clever. So cleverness, intellect, the computer mind, has become something to worship within this reality. He's got a great mind. Oh, he's so intellectual. But, you know, when I talk to intellectuals about the stuff we've been talking about today, I have to put it in baby steps, which I don't have to put it in when I'm talking to people who are more awake. But to an intellectual, I spoke at Oxford University, the Oxford Union, the famous debating society at the Oxford University a few months ago, and I had to put my presentation in baby steps so these people would get it, and these were the so-called elite students. Why? Because they're stuck in mind, and they have developed their mind, which is what exam passing and stuff is all about, and therefore they've become more entrapped in mind than the general population. The irony is not lost. And the thing is that cleverness, mind, without wisdom, consciousness, is the most destructive force on earth. And it's because the program is dominated by cleverness and not wisdom that we have the world that we have. It's very clever to know how to create an atomic bomb. It's not wise to do so, however. And this is the difference. And this is what happens when mind is replaced by consciousness. Cleverness is replaced by wisdom, which is both clever in terms of its knowledge, but also wise in its use of knowledge. And so these reptilian entities are absolutely locked into mind, and they're computer-like. And when I was in another state of consciousness a few years ago, and this female voice was talking to me as loud as mine is now for 5 hours about the nature of reality. One of the things it said to me was, if you were a computer and you were programmed to abuse children, would you have any problem with that? No, of course I wouldn't. Because as a computer, I would just play out the program. And So these computer-like reptilian bloodlines, reptilian hybrid bloodlines and reptilian control bloodlines, are computer-like, and therefore they have no empathy with the consequences of others for their actions. So when we look at pepper bombing Baghdad, we are horrified. They have no emotional consequence for slaughtering hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians and children. 3,000 people on 9/11, no problem. No emotional consequence because of no empathy. And this is what we need to understand, because as I say to people, if you judge what these guys will do on the basis of what you would do, you've lost the plot.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree. We have 3 more questions and we're just about out of time. So
okay, I'll be quick.
Okay. So this one kind of goes along with what you were just talking about. This is from Brian, and he asked if you still believe that the Illuminati system of control will come crashing down, and if so, can you give us an example of how this will happen?
Well, I think it will come down. I know it will come down. But it's going to go along the road of moving forward, or apparently so, for a while yet. But it will come down when people become conscious on in terms of numbers that will bring it down, because being unconscious is what's holding it together.
Exactly.
Once we get out of mind, we drop that state of consciousness, or lack of it, which is holding it together. So that's how it will come down, because it's just an energetic construct.
Exactly.
That's all it is. When the energetic vibration that is holding it together changes to a higher state of consciousness, a higher vibration, its previous manifestation, i.e. the construct, the control system, will collapse, because the energy holding it together will have gone. Take the cement out of a building, it's going to fall down. And so that's how it's going to come about. Now, the question is, when? It's already happening.
Right.
In terms of the build-up, the dam is already cracking, but the dam is still holding the water back. So we're going to see this process of control and seeking to manipulate more control going forward for a while yet. But it's doomed. It's doomed. It's doomed because the energetic state that is holding it together is doomed.
There you go. I love that. All right, next question is really a two-parter. It's a actually pretty easy. Could you comment on Jeb Bush's purported plans to run for the U.S. Senate, and do you foresee any significant revelations to the public regarding Jeb Bush's involvement with and connection to Huffman Aviation, which was the 9/11 flight school in Florida? And this is from J.S.
Oh, yes. I mean, that whole Florida flight school system at Venice Airport was just a CIA front. Venice Airport is notorious for running drugs for the CIA, and Mohammed Attar was a drug runner for the CIA. No way did he orchestrate 9/11. I mean,
right.
Please, you know, intelligent life calling planet Earth here.
Right, right.
See, and if you look at the process, the CIA have a branch in Pakistan called the ISI, the Military Intelligence Agency of Pakistan. It's the CIA Pakistan branch, and the ISI are fundamentally connected to the Taliban. And what happens in Afghanistan is you've got all the poppy fields, which is then turned into drugs, and through a system which the ISI orchestrate and administer and what have you, and then a lot of them are shipped to the United States. And it was in Florida where Attar was involved in that. So when the if you remember, the newspaper in India broke the story after 9/11. That the head of the ISI, a guy called Ahmed, had wired $100,000 to Mohammed Attar. Now, Ahmed was actually in Washington meeting State Department and CIA officials on 9/11. Just a coincidence, nothing to worry about.
Right.
And what would happen when that situation was revealed, surely, is that there would be moves against the guy who situation was revealed surely is that there would be moves against the guy who wired the money, because they were saying, oh, it was part of funding the 9/11 terrorist attack. No, it wasn't. It was to do with the running drugs through Florida. Attar's girlfriend, when he was living in Venice, in Florida, has publicly talked about the fact that he was running drugs in the sense that when he said the drugs were everywhere, he had loads and loads of money because he was running drugs. Of course he was. She said whenever they ran out of drugs, they would go across to Venice Airport where these flying schools were that trained the hijackers, and they'd come back with a great mass of drugs. You know, it was a drug running operation, and what they did was use Attar and other CIA assets to be the four guys, to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, to be blamed for it. You know, if you say to Attar, look, I want you here as part of the drug running operation, but you don't know, he doesn't know that actually being here would be part of the cover story for saying he was involved in 9/11. He would know that.
Right.
And this is how the whole thing was constructed. So those flying schools were fundamentally involved in that. And the coming back to the question, the Bush family, Father Bush being the head of it, is notoriously, again, when among researchers who research this, involved in the drug running operation. And so the Bushes are up to their neck in endless things that, as I've said, you know, if Father Bush was jailed for all his crimes against humanity, he would have to reincarnate many times to complete the sentence. And so Jeb Bush in Florida the governor at the time all this was going on. Of course, he was knowledgeable and aware of that. And I'm not surprised he's saying he's going to run for office and all the rest of it, because the Bush family like to be in the positions of political influence, because it helps them run their rackets and serve the bigger agenda that they massively serve. So you have, but you know, it's an age old story with the Bush family. I mean, they were involved fundamentally. The grandfather of the President Boyd Bush, Prescott Bush, he was one of the major conduits for funding Hitler.
Exactly. Well, we got 2 minutes left, and I've got to ask this question because it was from Paul. And it says, could it be that this world reality has already happened, that the powers to be are reenacting all the events for some reason, tales from a time loop? And then also he wants to know, have you ever heard of the lion shifters, and why do they always symbolize Diana with the lion and the moon? Got about a minute and a half, David.
Ah, well, that's a long story to do much more in a minute and a half. But it's possible. Because this program is a bit like a DVD. If you look at a DVD, you're playing a movie on the television. You watch the movie for a while, and what you have watched becomes your past. What you are actually watching becomes your perception of the present, and what you've yet to watch in the movie becomes your perception of the future. But it's all taking place on the same disc at the same time. And when the disc comes to an end, it goes back to the start and plays again. And there may be, I think the program does change, but I think the fundamentals of the program don't necessarily change that much. You know, these are the fascinating areas that I'm going into now.
Well,
as for Diana, Diana, that's a long story.
And I'll tell you what, we'll save that question for the next time that you're on the show. And I'm sure Paul will enjoy that, because we can kind of tie that into some of your other things.
Okay. Can I also say, Rebecca, just very quickly, I'm coming to America in January, and I'm going to be doing a seven-hour presentation at the Conscious Life Expo at the Los Angeles or the LAX Airport Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. And that's on the 16th of February. I'm doing the Monday, or the holiday Monday, I'm doing the 7 hours. But on the Saturday, I'm doing 90 minutes, 2 hours about the nature of reality and all the awakening side of it, the process of awakening that we've been talking about now in the chat just now.
And that's all going to be found on your website, right, David?
Yeah, all on the website, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Yep. David, this has just went by really, really fast. And, you know, if I get lucky, hopefully I'll come and see you when you are here in the United States in L.A. I'd love
that. That'd be great.
That'd be wonderful. David, thank you so much, sweetie.
Pleasure, Rebecca. Thank you very much.
Welcome back, and as we continue the program tonight, the death and carnage continues in Gaza at the hands of the Zionist-Israeli Talmudist war machine. Again, this is not a war, it's a massacre. What they're going to do with Gaza City is quite clear. They're going to essentially level it, or most of it. They're going to Fallujahize it, so the Palestinians are essentially without reasonable shelter at all, and they will be then open to all kinds of disease. Of course, the Israelis are using depleted uranium with their artillery rounds and aerial weaponry, so for the next 4.5 billion years, people will be dying. Now, the flip side to that is the winds blow from west to east, so a lot of that depleted uranium is going to blow right into Israel and kill Israelis as well. But these people have a thing about death that most of us who have, I think, a normal moral configuration, don't quite easily embrace. Go to Rents.com, if you would. Look at featured stories. We're on this 24 hours a day, trying to bring you as much news as possible. The Zionist Jews are keeping Western press out of Gaza, of course. What we're being fed, spoon-fed, is propaganda, mind control, matrix-style manipulation, nothing less than that. I did speak to journalist Sami Habib just hours before the Israeli invasion of Gaza, and that'll give you a pretty good idea how desperate things were at that point. They are obviously many hundreds of times worse now. We are getting reports of people being butchered in their homes, all the usual stuff that goes along with a genocidal Holocaust. Now, let us not forget, and I'm going to mention this again because it is crucial that we keep it in mind, 1.5 million, approximately, human souls were liquidated by the United States of America, its government, and its military in the former sovereign country of Iraq. Between 2 and 3 million have been thusly dispatched, terminated, massacred in Afghanistan by the United States government and its military in about the same time frame. This is a species that is rapidly failing, or it is certainly being taken over with virtual completion now by evil on the planet. There is so much going on here. What's real? What isn't real? It's an incredibly daunting thing for the average person with good intentions to walk into to try to understand. One of the ways to do that is to read the books of David Icke. David has been a friend of mine for many years, and he has contributed magnificently to those who would seek to find reality. And if the truth is a word you're more comfortable with, I can think of nowhere else to start looking for it than in David Icke's material. David is back with us tonight for his umpteenth visit over the years on the program. I'm very happy to have him. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, Jeff.
It's again a world that is ripping itself to shreds in many ways, and there is an awful lot that is, as they say, in the pending file that could come to pass at any time. Tell us about Israel. Your latest paper is Time to Tell the Truth About Israel Without Fear of the Mind Police. The thought censors don't like it. Tough, says David.
Well, the story of Israel is the story of the agenda that I've been talking about for all these years. It's a very important element in it. The agenda has many strands, many masks on the same face, and one of them is called Zionism, which is constantly equated by the ignorant with Jewish people, when there are large numbers of Jewish people who actually oppose Zionism.
Sure.
Zionism is not about race. It is about a political movement to advance this wider global agenda. And behind Zionism, right from the very start, is our old friends, the House of Rothschild. When you look at the evidence, and I detail this in my books, and you look at the work of people like Arthur Kessler and his book, The 13th Tribe, one of the greatest ironies of the situation that we're looking at is that Jewish people, overwhelmingly the Jewish people of today, have no historical connection with Israel whatsoever. It's an invention of the Rothschild family to use the Old Testament, written by who knows when, in who knows what circumstances, for who knows what agenda, to justify the occupation of a land which was being where the Palestinian Arabs were, and at that time were living in peace with Jewish people that were there. And then the House of Rothschild was behind the appalling events in Nazi Germany, and that was used to justify a homeland for the European Jewish people in Israel, who overwhelmingly, I repeat, have no historical connection. Not that that should matter. Oh, I've got no historical connection from thousands of years ago. I'm come to take your land over. God said it's mine.
Right.
Nonsense.
Right.
Even at that level, Jeff, it's nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not even justified at that level, because the vast majority of Jewish people today, especially the European Jewish people from which overwhelmingly the occupation of Israel came, actually come from southern Russia. In fact, I would say they go back to ancient Sumer, which is now Iraq, but
mm-hmm.
certainly you can pick the story up in Khazaria, in what was southern Russia, and the Caucasus.
Right.
And they had a mass conversion to Judaism in about 740 AD, I think it was.
Right.
And
those people who became Jewish by decision mm-hmm. in terms of religion, when the Khazari Empire broke up, they moved up into Eastern Europe. And then eventually into Western Europe and Germany, and we pick up the story with Nazi Germany and Hitler and all that stuff, which was funded, of course, and manipulated by the House of Rothschild with help from people like the Bush family, Prescott Bush, the present president's grandfather, etc., and this, that whole story.
It's so important, David, to understand, and our listeners, this is a very wise audience, very well informed, that most Jews today, people who are called, are not Semitic peoples at all.
No.
They're white-skinned Khazars.
Exactly. The Semitic peoples are the Arabs, ironically. And so when you have the Anti-Defamation League, another Rothschild front to hurl abuse and accusations of racism.
Threats, and blackmail, and all the rest of it.
All that stuff. I mean, these groups like the Anti-Defamation League and B'nai B'rith and all these...
Southern Poverty Law Center, you name it.
Yeah, and the Simon Wiesenthal Center. All these groups are there to jump on anyone who gets too close to the truth, to accuse them of being racist. Now, you know, when you look at what's happening in the Gaza Strip, which is a massive concentration camp, that's what it is. You know, I am sick, to be honest, of having Nazi Germany constantly quoted for why you can't say this or you can't say that, when we are watching, the world is watching, a concentration camp in Gaza of 1.5 million people. Not only a concentration camp where the controlling force, the Israeli government and military, control who and what goes in and doesn't go in and out, but actually now they're now bombing and having a ground war against a concentration camp.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
Well, it's
so,
like the...
So don't start quoting me about Nazi Germany when we're looking at it in front of our eyes in 2009.
We have to stop going back and permitting people to dredge up the old boogeyman Hitler and the Third Reich over and over again to hide and subvert what is going on in our faces. You're totally right.
Well, I would say this, you know, and this is an important point. Fascism is not a genetic... phenomenon.
No.
It is a state of being. And fascism and Nazism and that whole mentality can manifest itself in a Jewish body or a South African body or a South American body or a German body just as much as it can anywhere else. And what we're looking at here is the same mentality that ran Nazi Germany. Irony of ironies. He's actually in control of Israel. The same mentality, the same callousness,
people,
same lack of
same
mercy.
Ethics, same idea, right. Yep. Now, here's another thing.
When we're looking at it in front of our eyes in 2009.
We have to stop going back and permitting people to dredge up the old boogeyman Hitler and the Third Reich over and over again to hide and subvert what is going on in our faces. You're totally right.
Well, I would say this, you know, and this is an important point. Fascism is not a genetic phenomenon.
No.
It is a state of being. And fascism and Nazism and that whole mentality can manifest itself in a Jewish body or a South African body or a South American body or a German body just as much as it can anywhere else. And what we're looking at here is the same mentality that ran Nazi Germany. Irony of ironies. He's actually in control of Israel. The same mentality, the same callousness,
people,
same lack of
same
mercy.
Ethics, same idea, right.
Yeah.
Now, here's another thing, David. Let me pop this in. You live in England. The House of Rothschild, the City of London bankers, that's the center of it all, the seat of it all. Now, when you think about it, the Rothschilds created Israel. Israel is their fiefdom. And to that extent, a logical extrapolation would have to include the fact that the House of Rothschild has the world's fourth or fifth largest, most powerful thermonuclear arsenal. It has an army, a navy, and an air force, an international spy network that is second to none. international drug network that is huge, that traffics in human slavery all the time, prostitution, pornography on the internet, you name it. It all traces back to one essential ownership paradigm, and that is the House of Rothschild. Is that not correct?
Well, that is correct. The House of Rothschild is basically a global state unto itself. And because the House of Rothschild created Israel, and who mind controls it, of course, it even paid for the parliament building to be built in using many... satanic imagery and symbolism within
right,
it.
Right.
But it also controls the political system of the United States through...
Indeed, which we'll talk about in just a minute, David. Hold on, we have to pause. We'll come right back. Welcome back. I'm Jeff Rentz with David Icke. We're taking a look at Israel. The way it really is, and the way it really is far from what the average American believes it to be. When you have total control and domination of the United States of America on several crucial, critical levels, essential levels, it becomes a fairly easy issue to understand what's really going on here. And if you can spell the expression cash cow, I think you get the general idea. David, go ahead and tell us more about the control of America, which is virtually locked up by what we call Zionist Israel, Talmudic Israel, and the House of Rothschild.
Well, the House of Rothschild, of course, go back centuries. And through that time, they've not just had the ability to infiltrate institutions, but also to create them from the start. And the idea is to give the outward appearance of democracy and freedom while fundamentally controlling them. And if you take the unbelievable reluctance of American presidents to condemn the actions of the Israeli government, and I keep stressing that, the Israeli government and the Israeli military controlled by the same people.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, because of the propaganda, we forget that there are large numbers of Israelis who are against all this. Young people who refuse to go into the armed forces because they're against all this.
Heroic Israelis who...
Fantastic people.
Yeah.
Fantastic people who were never talked about because that's not... with the, in line with the song sheet, but the House of Rothschild created and controls Israel, and it has created a network in the United States, locking into families like the Rockefellers and others, that controls American politics, American business and banking, and thus they control the network that produces the American president. So now you have this grotesque situation currently where we're looking at what's happening in Gaza, inhumanity on a mega scale, and you've got President Bush who is refusing to say anything against the perpetrators of that evil. And we're going to very shortly on the 20th get another president, Mr. Change Obama, who is going to pursue precisely the same policy. You've got the neocon network behind Bush for the last 8 years, which is absolutely awash with American Israeli dual citizens and open Zionists, members of Zionist groups, people like Cheney and Rumsfeld, the Zionists. And now that's being replaced by another mask on the Illuminati face, which is the Democratic, so it says here, network controlling Obama, which, I mean, his White House Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel, his father Benjamin was a member of Ergun, one of the terrorist groups. People forget this, but actually Israel was bombed and terrorized into existence in 1948 by grotesque bombing and terrorist activity. activity
Murder.
By organizations like Ergun and the Stern Gang, which produced future prime ministers like Begin, Shamir, and Sharon. And these people who were fundamentally involved in the terrorist groups that bombed Israel into existence have then spent the rest of their lives condemning terrorism. And the new White House chief of staff for Obama, from the unbelievably corrupt political system of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, his father was a member of Ergun. So you've got a vice president in Joe Biden who says on Israeli television, I am a Zionist, and all the rest of it. And he's quite right when he says you don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist, because, like I say, it's a political movement. It's not, it's not nothing to do with the race of
Jewish
people.
We've got 35 million Christian Zionists in America.
Let's exactly. And, I mean, and again, the Christian Zionists and the Jewish Zionists are obsessed with the text of the Old Testament, and they use it to justify any ends. And given the fact, Jeff, that when you look at the Old Testament God, you see a force that is about no mercy. Destroy them. Kill the women. Kill the little children. Kill them all. Have no mercy. Destroy them. I mean, you know, the Old Testament God is full of this stuff. And when you're looking at what's happening in Gaza now, you're just looking at the Old Testament God's demands playing out. And when you literally do, and these extreme, I'm not talking about Jewish people in general here, but when these extreme Zionists actually do believe that they are the chosen people and above everyone else, and ironically then accuse others of racism, you know, stands back in amazement.
There's no irony of it at all. It's a divisive
tool. The irony is unbelievable. The ironies of the situation are staggering. But when you believe that, then people like the Palestinians literally are cattle. They're just nothing to you. You why should you have any compassion, any mercy, when they're just nothing because you're the chosen people? Now, that, I'm not talking, I repeat, of Jewish people in general, but the computer programs, which, well, I say there are in the end, the computer programs that have no empathy, no mercy, no compassion. I mean, they actually will do anything because they have no limits, because they have no ability to empathize with the consequences for others of their actions. And you find these people all over the world, but
well,
my goodness, they're running Israel, that's for sure.
In another breath, we could call it psychopathic behavior to the max. There's no morality, not as we understand it. Back in a minute with David Icke, live from England, as we continue.
The computer programs, which, well, I say there are in the end, the computer programs that have no empathy, no mercy, no compassion. I mean, they actually will do anything because they have no limits, because they have no ability to empathize with the consequences for others of their actions. And you find these people all over the world, but
well,
they're running Israel, that's for sure.
In another breath, we could call it psychopathic behavior to the max. There's no morality, not as we understand it. Back in a minute with David Icke, live from England, as we continue. All right, back with David Icke, live in England. David, it amazes me how total the control of America really has become. I guess when you control the audio and visual print media and the entertainment industry, and you have a message and agenda, and you have captive morons now, which is what the government school system of America produces, who are poisoned with toxic food, toxic ideas that they get from the media and all the rest of it, it's not too hard. But the amount of control here is really withering. These people, the gulf between those who understand or are trying to understand, those who don't get it, is a vision of this beige man they're calling black, this sock puppet, this servant of ultimately Zionist control. We're talking about the Federal Reserve. We're talking about so many things. And they voted this man in thinking he was actually going to bring change. That's pretty scary, isn't it?
Well, it's been depressing for me. I don't get depressed for long, but to see people who have come to some kind of understanding about this agenda, come to an understanding that what we call Republicans and Democrats are masks on the same face, different expressions of the same force. And yet, they have bought the Obama myth as if somehow, miraculously, through this deeply, not just controlled system, I repeat, but created system from the start by this network to give the illusion of freedom and choice while fundamentally denying it.
That's very important. You made an extremely important point. This system didn't evolve or devolve. This system was really created by these people.
Yeah, absolutely. To give this illusion of... Because, of course, what people do in their minds, because that's what they're told to do from cradle to grave, is they equate democracy with freedom. Well, democracies are elected dictatorships. That's what they are. We've seen that with so many regimes around the world that were elected. And then basically what you do is you tell the people what they want to hear, and of course Obama has done that magnificently. And then once you get in, you do as you like, irrespective of what you said in your attempt to get them to vote for you. So they're elected dictatorships. Okay, elect me. Okay, fine. Okay, I'm a dictator now. I'll do as I like. All the people controlling me will. And what you have with Obama is a classic expression of this technique that I talked about for years, problem, reaction, solution, where you create the problem, you get a public reaction, do something, and then you offer the solution to the problems you have covertly created. What we're seeing at this time is a presidential version of that. They put Boy Bush in to front up the creation over the last 8 years of enormous problems in terms of overseas wars and massive, massive economic problems, far bigger than people have imagined, because, you know, the economic situation at present I would symbolize as that situation you get with a controlled demolition of a building where the charges go off, and then there is that split second after the charges go off before the building actually starts to collapse, and then it collapses very quickly. We're in that point with the global economic system where the charges have gone off, and you can see there's a problem, but we're still in that split second before the whole thing collapses. We've seen nothing yet. And so what they've done is have 8 years, indeed more than 8 years, but particularly in the situation I'm talking about with Bush the last 8 years, of creating massive problems. And then along comes their solution. Because after Bush, people are going, do something. What's going on? Do something. This can't go on. And along comes Mr. Change Obama, who has been brilliantly sold using mass mind control understandings, technology, techniques,
NLP,
to become a blank screen.
Mm-hmm.
When he talks about change, hope, something to believe in,
mm-hmm.
he has never specified through 2 years of campaigning what that actually means. He's been presented as a blank screen on which the people project their version of what those things mean. So in that way, they've manipulated the situation for large, vast numbers of people to become all things to all men and women. Whatever you believe those things mean to you, project them onto Obama and believe that he sees it the way you do. And from the moment that got him into power, in November, he has started to fill his administration with the absolute opposite of change, of hope, and something to believe in. The old guard, the people that created the economic catastrophe, being appointed to the Obama administration to what? Do something about it? Are you having a laugh? And so it's been a massive mind manipulation coup on the collective human mind of vast, vast numbers of American people. And what they have done, like they did in Nazi Germany, where they voted for an orator, not that, you know, I would suggest that, from my personal point of view, that Obama's much of an orator. I mean, he's an open book to me. He reads the autocue words that someone else has written.
Exactly.
But in Germany, you had someone come to power, Adolf Hitler, at a time of economic catastrophe and massive, massive problems in Germany. And he was talking about change, hope, something to believe in, giving Germany its pride back. And people went for that because, again, they didn't ask the questions that so many Americans have not asked, and indeed not just Americans, people around the world. Mr. Obama, over here, just a second. What do you mean by change, hope, and something to believe in? Give me some specifics. And so they voted Hitler into power to start with, and then they realized after a while that they had, in their minds, voted for a dream, and what was delivered was a nightmare. And unfortunately, that is what's going to happen with Obama.
Yeah, oh, exactly.
Because Obama comes from a deeply, deeply corrupt political system
in
Chicago, which produced him, which spawned him, which developed him. He's just as Clinton took his Arkansas mafia to Washington, so the same is happening with Obama in Chicago.
Exactly.
And there's going to be a great large number of very, very disappointed and devastated people who've given everything in terms of their emotion and their hope to Obama, and they're going to see a very different person unfold, because this guy, take what he appears to stand for, take what he appears to be, turn it on its head, and you've got somewhere near the truth.
Stand by right there, and brilliantly said, with David Icke. We'll be back. Hi, welcome back. Talking with David Icke in England. The election of the quite possibly illegal alien Barack Hussein Obama, and he will be saying Hussein at the swearing-in inauguration. As the next president is without any question in my mind one of the, if not the, biggest mass mind control hoaxes in recorded history. As David Icke perfectly stated a couple of minutes ago, when the majority of Obama's Kool-Aid drinkers watched him speak and listened to him, they projected their own, often, shall we say, self-centered wants, desires, wishes, hopes, onto a blank screen, and then proceeded to paint all of that in Technicolor. It was a brilliant mass mind social engineering victory, a success. Obama, of course, the chain-smoking, former crack-smoking, former, I don't know, bisexual, corrupt Chicago fraud, is without question a successful orator. He can read the teleprompter. At least Hitler had to speak extemporaneously on occasion. We've seen what happens when Obama tries to do that. It doesn't work. Of course, on-the-job training will make him somewhat effective in time. But as we've talked about at Rents.com in print and on this program, and as David has mentioned, the first appointment of Rahm Emanuel told any cogent, honest observer about all they needed to know where this man was coming from and where he was going to take the country. Emanuel is a killer. I'm not speaking literally, although I don't know that. Speaking figuratively. The son of a killer, literally speaking, wants compulsory national service for all Americans 18 to 25 and has said on videotape that he doesn't see why all Americans aren't forced to do compulsory national service. Obama has said on video, David, and you've seen it, he wants this National Service Corps to be equally as well funded as the United States military and, quote, just as strong as the United States military, end quote. Doesn't that speak brown shirts to you?
Well, yes, it does. And, you know, we go back to what I said earlier about Bush being the problem creator in the public mind and then Obama coming along as the solution man. It's much easier to impose Orwellian type fascism with a smiling face and in the name of freedom and in the name of serving your country and your community than it is just to say we're doing it because we want total control. And it's much easier and more efficient if you present yourself as the smiling shepherd and the the Pied Piper than if you present yourself as the obvious tyrant. So so many people who projected their hope and their sense of the future upon Obama are for some considerable time, a lot of them are going to follow his agenda for creating this more and more advanced Orwellian state in the United States.
Right. Useful idiots for a while.
Yeah, and they'll do it on the basis of believing that they are doing something right. They are serving their country. And I don't know if you've seen that clip on the Internet. It's on my website. And I'm sure it's around the Internet a lot. Of these young kids who march into the room chanting like mind-controlled zombies about Obama and what they're going to do in the name of Obama and for Obama and what Obama has done for them. I mean, you know, don't let anyone think that when you use the term Nazi youth that you're exaggerating, because, you know, that kind of mentality, that technique of controlling the minds of young people comes in many forms. And really, someone needs to come along here and snap their fingers and break the spell on the mind of so many people in America, because these are dangerous times. I've said in articles recently that Obama, and it sounds on the face of it ridiculous, but it's not. Obama is far more dangerous than Bush, because Obama can sell a used car. He can sell a line. He can sell a fantasy. Yeah. Clearly he can, because he has. Yeah. Whereas Bush, you know, can't put two words together in the right order, couldn't do that. And therefore, this man is far more dangerous, because he can sell the fantasy, which is actually a nightmare.
I couldn't agree more, and I do think this idea of I don't know if it's forced, but compulsory national service is going to be absolutely on the agenda. How quickly they'll try to introduce it, I don't know. Emmanuel refused to talk about uniforms when asked by a New York Post reporter in an interview. He made it quite clear that he wasn't going to answer the question directly. When asked about barracks and all the rest of it, he wouldn't answer those questions either. He said, well, if you're asking me if you'll have to do 25 jumping jacks a day, the answer is yes. They're trying to put together, David, in my opinion, a new brown shirt brigade here, a national organization to enforce the snitch culture. And if they ever have to put people in camps, they'll have no trouble at all manning those camps and staffing them with people who will exterminate the inmates on demand.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an important point to emphasize. When a president is replaced by another one, you don't start again. That's not the way this conspiracy works. The conspiracy is a seamless journey towards global tyranny, the global fascist Orwellian state. What happens is that different faces come in and out of that tyrannical journey, that tyrannical agenda, fronting it up for a while. So We had Clinton, then we had Bush, then we've got Obama. These are just faces fronting up the same agenda. And because the faces change, and to a certain extent, though increasingly not so, the rhetoric changes, then people think that they're moving from this to change to that to change to that. But what they're looking at is the same story unfolding with different front men and different names on the door. So what we're talking about here, Jeff, about this compulsory national service, I mean, you go back to the books over the years, going back to the late 1960s of Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's former national security advisor, who is the mentor behind Obama, and you'll find what we're talking about and what Obama is now proposing to introduce in those books. This agenda has been projected forward a very, very long time. And so we're not looking at Obama going, oh, shall we introduce national service? Shall we create another brown shirt organization? It was in the agenda a long time ago. His job is just to come in and sell it. And so that's what we're looking at. This is not something they're considering and talking about. This is a done deal because it's the agenda, and that's what he's been brought in to sell. And what you need is the people, because they're in full knowledge, the number of people who are in full knowledge of this agenda and where it's going are tiny compared with the population of the world and the population of the United States. You need to manipulate your target population to police each other. You have to turn the sheep into sheepdogs for other sheep. Mm-hmm. And that's what this whole network and proposition is all about. You quite rightly have articulated. And so we're just looking at the next stage of the agenda being played. And now, because it's moving faster and faster towards its goal, it's getting more and more serious and more blatant and more and more detailed. And now the time has come to really go for the creation of a network among the people to police the people. And that's what this national service is all about. Now, you try to get Bush and Cheney, blatant, obvious, in-your-face warmongers, to sell the draft. They would find it almost impossible because of the perception people have of them. Mm-hmm. But Obama selling the draft to serve change, to serve the new world, much, much easier. Do you think those people, those young black kids that marched into that room that you can see on the internet chanting in ritual fashion, do you think they wouldn't serve in the military if Obama asked them to? Of course they would.
By the hundreds of thousands.
And so this is what we're looking at. This agenda is advancing very quickly now.
All right, we're coming up on the top of the hour break here, and if you doubt any of this, either go to davidicke.com.
To police the people. And that's what this national service is all about. Now, you try to get Bush and Cheney, blatant, obvious, in-your-face warmongers, to sell the draft. They would find it almost impossible because of the perception people have of them.
Mm-hmm.
But Obama selling the draft to serve change, to serve the new world, much, much easier. Do you think those people, those young black kids that marched into that room that you can see on the internet chanting in ritual fashion, do you think they wouldn't serve in the military if Obama asked them to? Of course they would.
By the hundreds of thousands.
And so this is what we're looking at. This agenda is advancing very quickly now.
All right, we're coming up on the top of the hour break here, and if you doubt any of this, either go to davidicke.com or certainly follow rents.com. We've had the videos. I had the audio clip of Rahm Emanuel talking about forced national service. I had it up for a long time. It's still there at rents.com. The Obama clip, maybe we'll play that. It's just about 30, 40 seconds at the start of the next hour to give you an idea again of how accurate the scenario we're painting here. This is a done deal. These people are simply here to implement it, but it's already a fait accompli. It's happening. So we will continue. About 30 seconds left, David. Anything you want to do to wrap up this hour real quick?
Yeah, I would make this point that there are a handful, relatively, of people in full knowledge pushing this agenda forward. There are billions of people who are being subjected to this agenda. I think I see a way out of this, and it's about time we started coming together, dropping the fault lines of division of religion and race and all this nonsense, and brought an end to this stuff, because we can. The figures alone, the mathematics alone show that.
Very good. All right, we'll do that much more ahead with David Icke in just a few minutes, and we'll play that audio clip for you as we continue. So stay right there, and we'll be back. Back. Jeff Rentz, glad you're along tonight. We are Coast to Coast Live on GCN and, of course, around the world on the Internet. David Icke is with us for another visit tonight. He is in England, where it's very early in the morning. Thanks for getting up, mate, once again, as always. Here's that audio clip, David. I'm sure you've seen it. Many of you have heard it. We'll play it again. It has two parts. It's short. The first part is a television interview with Rahm Emanuel talking about this national service issue, and then you hear a short clip of Obama. Now, there's no mistaking what they're saying, and as David made so eloquently clear, when people watch and listen to Obama, they hear what they want to hear. It's bizarre. So, all right, here we go. You there, David?
Yes, I am, mate.
Okay, here we go.
Well, you have to, it's required of everybody, 18 to 25, 3 months, and at some point at that point you do it. Obviously, I'm not going to say it's perfect legislation, we'll work that process through.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
Okay, I think you got the idea through the noise. Could you hear that all right?
Yeah, I could hear it fine. And, you know, those words are straight out of the books of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is, as people, many people might know and many people might not, admitted some years ago in a Paris magazine interview that he set out as a national security advisor in the Carter administration to entice the Soviet Union to invade Afghanistan. And he did this by funding and training fighters, what they would call today terrorists, to oppose and undermine the Kabul government, which was then controlled by the Soviet Union. And the idea, from his own mouth, was to let the Soviet Union basically know what was going on so that they would invade Afghanistan to protect the Kabul government from these attacks and get mired in their in what he called their Vietnam. And the idea, he said, was to undermine the other superpower at the time, the Soviet Union. It led to a million, at least, Afghan lives being lost, and it also created what became known as the Mujahideen and the Taliban, which then, of course, took over Afghanistan. And along came Osama bin Laden as a front man, a focal point for this, quote, resistance to the Soviet occupation. And now we have Brzezinski's man, Obama. Irony of ironies, I mean, they're endless, saying we must increase troop numbers in Afghanistan to stop the Taliban, when the man behind Obama actually started the whole ball rolling by funding and training what became the Mujahideen. And of course, Al-Qaeda, which translates as the database, because it was the CIA database of Mujahideen fighters, which Brzezinski had started, like I say, the whole ball rolling with. So, people might say that that's contradictory and that's, oh, how could that happen? But we go back to what I was saying before the break. We're looking at an ongoing agenda that that has different phases. We call these phases in America presidential periods in office. And so what suits the agenda at the time is what you do. So it suited the agenda at the time for Brzezinski to do what he did in Afghanistan. It suits the agenda now to, and has since 9/11, to make the Taliban and Mujahideen that they created the focus of hostility. And there seems to be on the surface, if you don't know the agenda, to be a contradiction, but actually the theme, the cement that holds these apparent contradictions together is what suits the agenda at this moment in time.
All right, very good. Let me, I've cleaned the audio up on this little short clip again. Let me play it again to make sure all of you heard that clearly. I know you heard the Obama part, but I'm not sure if you heard the Emmanuel part clearly. So let's, here it is again.
Compulsory then?
Well, you have to, in a sense, it's a required of everybody, 18 to 25, 3 months. And at some point at that point, you do it. Obviously, I'm not going to say perfect legislation. We'll work that process through.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
All right, now, there are a number of things about that that should alarm each and every one of you listening to this program. I won't go into all of them, but just in watching that little piece of video, David, it is appalling to see the people seated behind the beige man applauding mindlessly, robots, every one of them, not listening to anything he's saying, simply applauding because the rest of them are applauding, the sheep in unison clapping their hands.
Well, that's what I was talking about a little while ago with Obama's ability to sell a fantasy and to sell a nightmare as a dream. And that's what you're getting. You're getting him actually articulating horrendous proposals to create this Orwellian self-policing force. While people are smiling and clapping, it's like, you know, it's like turkeys sitting there clapping when someone announces that Thanksgiving is coming, you know. But because
exactly.
of the mind control nature of this, they can't see it. And, you know, this is a big area of my research. In fact, it's been the focal point for some years. And I feel that to understand what's happening and how it's happening and why it's happening, we really need to understand a few things. Crucially, that not in reality in total, in the multidimensional level of infinity, but in this five-sense reality that we daily experience and we call life, this is a computer program. It's an incredibly advanced, almost beyond the imagination, sophisticated computer program, and much beyond anything that we perceive as computer programs. This is a computer program. It's an incredibly advanced, almost beyond the imagination, sophisticated computer program, and much beyond anything that we perceive as computer programs in our daily lives. But a computer program it is. And I'll tell you what I've concluded some time ago, and it's being confirmed to me more and more because incredible things are happening in my life which are showing me extraordinary things at this time. And I'm going to put it all together in the next book, which will be based on the stuff I'm talking about now. People talk about my mind and your mind. I don't think that's what it is. I think what we're talking about at the level of mind is the mind. I think there's the mind, the computer program. Mm. And if you operate at the level of mind, which I would say is not what I would term consciousness, free-thinking consciousness, it is mind, it is a computer program. I mean, you look at even a desktop computer, Jeff, and you can say that at a very, very basic level, it has a mind. It has the ability to make decisions, but it's all right. It's based on input at that level. But they're already developing biological computers, as they call them, which have the ability not just to react to input and do as they're told, but actually to make assessments and decisions
right.
based on information. As I've been writing about for years now, the body is a computer. It's a biological, a holographic computer. And you look at the boxes of what a computer is, and the human body ticks them all. And it's a crystalline organism, which is a receiver-transmitter of information from what I call the cosmic internet. And this world that we're looking at and we think is so solid that is outside of us actually only exists on the screen in our brains or in our genetic structure. You know, people say, tell me about television. And they say, okay, it's pictures on a screen. Well, yes, it is. But the only place that television exists in that form is actually on the screen. Everywhere else, it's frequency fields and electronic circuits. Tell me about the internet. Well, it's websites and it's text and it's colors and it's this and it's that. No, no. Yes, it is. But that only exists on the screen of the computer. Everywhere else, the internet is electronic circuits, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. It's a program. And if you log into the internet in Australia or South America or Washington or London, you are logging in to the same collective reality. You might interact with that reality in a different way. You might go to different websites. You might go to the same website and have a different view about what you think about that website, but you're experiencing the same collective reality. And this reality that we're experiencing is a cosmic, if you like, version of that. And we are connected to it through what we term mind.